Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's the Thursday edition of our show. It's Bill Leffin and Wendy Snyder, and we're very excited because in just a matter of minutes, we're going to check in with Bernie Sanders, who has a new book out.
It's called Our Revolution, and I think our first question should just be, hi, Bernie Sanders, what the hell happened?
That's a good first opening question.
Isn't it?
I've told several people that we have him, and we only have him for a very limited amount of time.
30 seconds, I believe you said.
We have him for 30 seconds.
That's what you said yesterday. Is it a little longer?
So I've asked some people close to me. I go, in a limited amount of time, what should we focus on with Bernie Sanders? And overwhelmingly, they all said, ask him what sort of soup he enjoys.
Okay.
I don't know why. But for many people, that's the question that's on their mind about Bernie Sanders is what sort of soup he enjoys.
I'm going chicken noodle or matzo ball. My favorite is matzo ball. Can I just say that?
I like a French onion, but I've never met a matzo ball I haven't liked.
I think we'll have a good time with Bernie Sanders. I'm anxious to talk to him.
All right. Well,
the timing couldn't be better. Now I'm afraid to. Now I think those close to me are out to get me.
You might ask him about his appointment to Senate leadership, but
that might come up.
I don't know. I mean,
that might come up,
but
well, this book that he has pretty much documents his campaign. And you know what? Why don't we take a quick break right now, and we'll come right back with Bernie Sanders.
That's happening. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Something going wrong. I mean, like, everybody knows their own body, and you know, I've been playing hockey my whole life, and I'm like, you know, something's not right. It's not the greatest news when you find out that you have MS. I know, going through treatment last week and seeing the average people that come in. I know I met a guy who's been doing it for 50 years, and he shot a 78 a couple weeks ago, so he's, you know, life moves on after this. You know, my goal is hopefully to get back on the ice and contribute and help my team.
Never miss a story on 720 WGN.
Every 2.5 minutes, someone in this country is told they have lung cancer. If you or someone you love has been diagnosed with lung cancer, you can turn to the American Lung Association by going to lung.org/lungcancer. We can help you better understand your diagnosis and learn about new treatment options and clinical trials in your area. The American Lung Association is committed to helping you get the answers and support you need at lung.org/lungcancer.
Orion Samuelson here, and you know I buy my vehicles from the Gary Long Auto Group in McHenry. And if you want to drive a new Cadillac, buy it from a dealer you can trust. Go to Gary Lang Cadillac during their Black Friday sales event now through the end of November. Not only will you receive red carpet treatment, you will receive significant savings off your new Cadillac's MSRP. For example, save 25% off a brand new 2016 Cadillac XTS. Don't just take my word for it. Experience Gary Lang Cadillac's difference with the most knowledgeable and friendly sales associates with the largest savings on remaining 2016 Cadillacs during Gary Lang's Black Friday sales event going on right now. Visit GaryLangAuto.com and view their entire inventory 24/7. And remember, if it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much.
Savings from MSRP is plus tax, title, license, and dock fee on select vehicles.
Hey, Chicagoland, get your home ready for the holidays with deals from Lumber Liquidators. This week, waterproof flooring is up to 22% off, including wood look tile, luxury vinyl plank, and new easy-to-install Corlux engineered vinyl plank. Get beautiful bronzed Brazilian acacia laminate for just 99 cents, $1 off per square foot on Bellawood pre-finished hardwood. More from 59 cents and special financing. Get your holiday flooring deals at Lumber Liquidators, the preferred hardwood flooring company of the Chicago Bulls today.
Have you ever had a really good furniture shopping experience? Think about it. If you haven't, it is about time you do. So go to Goods Furniture. Goods is, simply put, an escape. And not just because they're outside the hustle and bustle of Chicago, but because they have created a truly leisurely, relaxing atmosphere with their 250,000 square feet of showrooms, their wine cellar restaurant, market square shops, and yes, a bed and breakfast. It's just an entirely different experience at Goods Furniture. And no matter where you are in life, Goods has furniture to match your style and your budget. Whether you're buying your first home, expanding your family, or you just want something new. And the furniture at Goods is on sale every day, so you can always be sure you're getting the best value. No hype, no haggling, just honest-to-goodness value day in and day out. It's an easy way to spend the day and maybe the night. Goods Furniture in Kewaunee, Illinois.
Take home a piece of history from the Chicago Tribune, get your own Cubs memorabilia, and this includes the newspaper from the historic win. All you need to do is visit chicagotribunestore.com. Do it now. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. We've just received confirmation from Bernie Sanders' people that Mr. Sanders will be joining us in just a matter of moments.
So in the meantime, let's take a phone call from Michael. But Michael, we have to tell you right now, if Bernie calls, we're going to have to drop you like a ton of bricks.
Okay, fine. To your point, the popular vote and all the rest of it, you know, we really have to understand that the founding fathers were pretty brilliant guys when they came up with such a concept. And although the two or three things that you had mentioned are very accurate in terms of why we have the Electoral College, one of the things for the American people to understand, which I think is rather simple, if you had just two states and there were 700 people who were voting, so yeah. Several states, but let's say California and New York had 500 of those 700. Those 200 people would not be getting federal funding. They wouldn't get any support from the federal government whatsoever. The time and money would be devoted to just those states that had the popular vote. Another thing, I don't believe that Michigan has been finalized in terms
still
of the vote.
Yeah.
Yeah, still not. So we don't know that that 1.2 million or 1.3 million will withhold. To Wendy's point, I think you're dead on about the Electoral College being able to keep whack jobs from getting into the White House. And I think in this particular case, I'm not going to like it to somebody being crazy person, but I think in this particular case, I think the Electoral College did exactly that. They kept one of the greatest crooks of all political history from becoming a president, the most dishonest individual that politics has seen in a very, very long time. So, in fact, it did do its job.
In your opinion, it did. And, Michael, we thank you for that opinion.
Thank you.
Someone else just said, "If this is by way of text, if Hillary had won, you wouldn't all be picking apart the voting system." Incorrect.
We totally would if it didn't match up. That's what bothered us the most, isn't it? I can't speak for you.
From the very first time I ever heard about the Electoral College system, and I still remember it was a social studies class when I was in sixth grade. The teacher was explaining it, and all of us in the class were asking the same question. But what if, hypothetically, we weren't saying hypothetically because we were in sixth grade, but what if one candidate had 1 million more votes than the other candidate, but the Electoral College allowed that person to win over the one who had the most votes? And the teachers were like, well, more than likely, we'll never see that happen. Except we did see it happen, and we've seen it happen twice.
And you just put it, it's twice in how many years, but when you put it down into four elections, it's a lot closer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is, isn't it? So, I don't know. You've got all these people signing a petition saying it's antiquated and it's time to do away with it. And I understand that because I can't. Earlier, I was saying I can't think of another part of the world where if they hold an election, you could come in second but still be the winner. But I can't think of anything else in life where that's the case.
It's, to me, like they're playing soccer and everybody gets a trophy because it doesn't matter who's first or second.
Yeah, with much, much, much higher stakes.
Well, yeah.
With far higher stakes. But you would think at some point, and I get it, believe me, if you're the team that won this, you say, no, business as usual. Why would we look at this? Why would we change this? But it does. Believe me, if it were the other way,
we'd still question it.
Yeah, you still go, well, wait a second. That many more people wanted that person to win, but they didn't win because of the structuring of the Electoral College? That doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't seem fair to me.
And our last caller just said it has to do, at this point, with federal funding. There must be some other way to figure out how to fund all the areas of the country more fairly without it being represented by the Electoral College. There must be some formula that would be accurate in doing that. You know, it's like when they start school and they fund schools based on the attendance on the first day.
Right.
That's backwards. That's
totally.
That's a fake number. You can't do that. It'd be like if in baseball they decided the amount of people by opening day because you get a big crowd on opening day. That doesn't make any kind of sense.
It really doesn't make sense to me.
No.
And
no.
I would be questioning it as well, and I'm not pulling you into it, but it doesn't seem to make sense to me because in all the years except for Al Gore's,
right.
Everything seemed to match up. So that was peculiar, right. In my opinion.
Right.
So, yes, we would be talking about it if it went the other way.
60 says, it has happened 5 times since its inception. The first time it failed, it was only 10 years after. I lost the rest of the text, just went away. Hold on a second. After we began our government.
Maybe we can ask Bernie Sanders about that, because
maybe
he is on the line with us right now. Bernie Sanders, how are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
We're good. We kind of wanted to say to you for a first question, what the heck happened?
Okay, well, that's a good question. why don't we start there? I think a couple of things happened. I think what Donald Trump, who is nobody's fool, understood is that there are millions of people in this country who are hurting, and they're hurting badly. And there are very few people in public life who are paying attention to their pain and their needs, and certainly the Democratic Party has not done enough of that. You know, you just think about it. In Chicago or Vermont or any place else, you're a working mom and you're making $40,000, $50,000 a year. How much does it cost to send your kid to child care? $10,000, $15,000 a year. How do you afford that?
That's true.
You're a middle-class family, maybe like my parents. My parents never went to college. And you want desperately your daughter to go to college. But it costs $40,000, $50,000 a year to send your kid to college. How do you do that? Or do you want to see your kid leave school $80,000 in debt? You're worried about that. You are today in Chicago a 60-year-old worker. And maybe you are one of the 50% of older workers in America who are coming upon retirement age. You know how much money you have in the bank? You got zero in the bank. You don't got a nickel in the bank. That's the reality, because the wages you've gotten over the years have not kept up with inflation. So you're getting old. You're not feeling that well. You have this ailment. You got that ailment. And you're heading into retirement, and you got no money in the bank. You're going to have to live on Social Security. How are you going to do that? And what Trump, you know, you're a worker in Indiana, and maybe you saw your job go to China or to Mexico, and you're making 50 or 60% of what you previously make. Well, you know what? Those are real issues. And millions of Americans are suffering those realities. And unfortunately, a lot of the political leadership and too many people in the Democratic Party did not pay attention to that pain that's out there. And Trump talked to it. Now, between you and me, I have my doubts about how sincere he was about taking on the establishment. This is a guy who said he's going to take on the establishment. Well, you know what? People today don't like the establishment. They want somebody to take on the establishment. Will Mr. Trump do that? Well, that remains to be seen. I have my doubts. But that is one of the reasons that I think why he ended up winning the election.
Senator Sanders, your new book is called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. I know the title was chosen several weeks or months ago. Would you still include the part about a future to believe in if you knew that the results would be what they were?
Yes. I mean, based on our revolution, what I believe in is a future to believe in. And what our revolution means to me and the future to believe in is to say we are the wealthiest country in the history of the world. Why do we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth? Why do we have so much income and wealth inequality? Why are we the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all people as a right or paid family and medical leave? So the future to believe in is to say that when we stand together and when we don't allow demagogues to divide us up, when we are prepared to take on Wall Street and corporate America and the drug companies and the insurance companies, yeah, we can create an incredible country which works well for all and not just the top 1%.
So many people had said if you had gone up against Donald Trump, there was no way you would have won. After Hillary's defeat, many are now saying the opposite. Bernie Sanders was the man who could have beat Donald Trump. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it's not worth speculating about. I think, the answer is maybe I could have, maybe I couldn't have. I mean, I think that it's very possible we could have, but who knows? You know, no one can tell what a 3 or 4 month campaign and hundreds of millions of dollars of negative ads do. We don't know. But I think the point is not to speculate or do Monday morning quarterbacking. The point is to look into the future, where we are now and where we have got to go. And I think the major lesson to me of this moment is that millions of people are going to have to become involved in the political process. Because I think, let's not forget a couple of things. Number one, Hillary Clinton ended up getting 2 million more votes than Donald Trump did. Okay. Number two, on issue after issue after issue, the ideas that I and others have brought forth about raising the minimum wage, pay equity for women, creating millions of jobs by rebuilding our infrastructure, addressing the planetary crisis of climate change, making sure that the wealthy and large corporations pay their fair share of taxes so we can protect the needs of our veterans and senior citizens. Those are ideas that the vast majority of the American people believe in. The Republicans, by and large, do not believe in them. And our job is to bring our people together, get them to stand up and fight back. And if we do that, I think the future will be okay.
Senator, we know you're short on time, but I just need to ask you this. I read your comments about the appointment of Steve Bannon as advisor to Mr. Trump and what a bad idea this is. Just, if you wouldn't mind, a minute or two on that.
Yes. Look, in a democratic society, we can disagree on issues. You have a view on health care. I have a different view on health care. You have a view on education, on taxes. I have a different view. Fine. But I would hope that in the year 2016, after all of the blood and the pain that we have gone through for hundreds of years in terms of discrimination, starting against the terrible things done to the Native American people, going back to slavery and Jim Crow and all kinds of racist activity, going back to sexism, 100 years ago women didn't have the right to vote, get an education, going back to homophobia, we have made progress in this country that the American people have a right to be proud of. We have, you know, we still have a long way to go. But the younger generation out there, and I've been with these young people, this is the least discriminatory generation in the history of this country, and we should be very proud of that. It is not acceptable. We can disagree on the issues, but it is not acceptable for a president of the United States to have overt, open racists by his side. That is something we cannot accept. That is something we cannot compromise on. So I would hope very much that President-elect Trump understands that and rescinds his invitation to Mr. Bannon to join the administration.
Bernie Sanders, our guest. You're going to be over at North Central College in Naperville tomorrow at 7, Anderson's Bookshop event. You can go to sanders.senate.gov. I want to personally thank you because of you, first-time voters and many not even old enough to vote, paid attention and got engaged for the first time ever, and I want to thank you for that.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here, sir. We appreciate it.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
It's Bernie Sanders. Again, the book is called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In.
I wanted him longer, and we had to let him go, and we were told that he will not wrap up because he feels funny doing it.
Right.
I wanted to ask him about Larry David. I wanted to chit-chat, and you had to ask him about the soup, and that never got asked.
Next time we have him on, there'll be many more of those sorts of questions.
I felt like I was talking to Larry David, didn't you?
Yeah,
right
there were
at
a couple
beginning?
Of times where you wanted to go, remember the episode where you and Jeff Garland were in the... that came up once or twice.
Such a nice, pleasant man, and I wish him well. Read his book, Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. And once again, he will be at North Central College in Naperville tomorrow at 7 p.m. Expect a lot of high school and college age students to show up and see them. It's going to be packed.
Pretty, pretty good. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Again, we want to quickly thank Bernie Sanders, the esteemed senator from Vermont, for joining us. And his book is called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. Seemed like a nice man. I think the one thing you have to say about him is that he really does seem to genuinely care, doesn't he?
Honestly, yes. And
he doesn't seem to be in this for himself, I don't think. He seems to enjoy the country and love it and wants it to be great. And I mean, I don't know why else you'd go into politics if you didn't have that feeling about it, but it just seems to really embody him.
He seems like he wanted to make a difference.
Yeah, I think so. I wonder how history will remember him. I mean, I know he's still very active, obviously. But I wonder, after the story of this election is long told and overdue, how will people look back on Bernie Sanders and say to themselves, where exactly did he fit in? You know what I mean?
How old is he?
I don't know the answer to that.
I gotta look.
30. I'm really bad at guessing age. I'm gonna go with 30.
He's an elite baby.
Is he elite baby?
78.
Is he 78?
Right?
Yeah.
75. Which is it, Kev? 75?
75.
How old's Trump? Donald J. Trump.
I don't know.
I believe he's 70 or will be soon. Maybe this week? I don't know.
I know he will be, when he takes office, the oldest person to ever hold the office of president.
Donald is 70.
All right. Yeah. Donald is 70. So Bernie would have been the oldest as well, and there's no chance of him running again.
Yeah. Didn't they say that about all three major candidates? Because Hillary Clinton is up there, too, that whoever had won this election would have been our oldest serving president.
So whenever people go, age just doesn't mean that much, though, does it?
I don't think it does.
Well, remember when Ronald Reagan ran and he was going to turn 70 while in office?
And people panicked.
Yeah.
Was the whole, I will not use my opponent's youth and inexperience against him.
Right,
was a
brilliant.
Huge deal.
That's brilliant, yeah. And we still haven't had, by the way, a president that is younger than we are. That still hasn't happened. I mean, it's going to happen.
How old's Barack Obama?
Probably going to happen soon. He's a couple years older than us.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought he was younger than us.
No.
He looks like he's
so,
30.
When Chelsea Clinton becomes president?
When she's president? Or Adam Levine?
There's no way. Kanye's running next
term.
Oh, right.
He's younger than us. All right. So that's
you know,
what will happen.
Can I just say, when I say Kanye West said he's going to run for president next time, ho, 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 that'll never happen.
It's not a joke anymore.
I know. Didn't we say that
right.
about Donald Trump when he first got in the running?
I still remember, and I mean, we're going back a couple of years, when Arnold Schwarzenegger announced that he'd be running for the governorship of California. People, wouldn't that be funny if the Terminator was the governor? That would be so funny. So that kind of set the precedent for, or maybe they will win.
Jesse
you know?
Ventura?
Right. Oh, there's a bunch. Gopher from Love Boat.
How does that happen?
I don't know. Al Franken, I mean, really, there's a bunch of people that at first you go, I'm not sure that Gopher from Love Boat would make for a great politician. Wrong. He was in, so what do we know?
Is he still in the practice?
I don't know if he is or not.
No.
Fred Grandy, is
no,
that his
he's
name?
Been
he's out.
For a while. Sonny Bono.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Steve Largent.
Yeah.
Was a football player. I mean,
right.
Jack Kemp was a football player and was a very respected member of Congress.
Right. Ronald Reagan was an actor,
yeah.
You know, so the Bonzo movies. When you watch Bedtime for Bonzo, you don't say, oh, I bet at some point that guy's the president.
It's all about the monkey. You wanted a monkey.
Show me the monkey.
It's a chimp. Actually, there is a difference.
Right.
A monkey
right.
has a tail. An ape does not.
We yes. didn't need to know. We just need to know there was a difference.
You gave Steve too much information.
Sometimes, you know, my Brookfield Zoo spiel comes out of me
handy.
When I was a tour guide over
I
there.
I didn't mind you telling us, but it's the way you kept pointing your hands as if you were in front of the ape.
And please remain seated while doing the newscast,
yes,
won't you?
At all times. All right, a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He's tall, good looking, and he's large. He's large.
Do you know this song at all?
Large.
I vaguely remember it. I love this episode of The Little Rascals.
This is, boy, this, seriously, this sounds more like The Little Rascals than The Little Rascals does. All right. This is from the Robert Altman film Popeye, which starred Robin Williams as Popeye.
And the best olive oil ever made to be olive oil.
Shelley Duvall, perfect as olive oil. You would also know her probably from The Shining,
mm-hmm.
where she was Wendy.
Yep.
You'd probably know her from a myriad of other Robert Altman films, Three Women, and the list goes on and on and on. Yesterday, if you were anywhere near your internet, you probably already saw this, but she is going to be appearing on a Dr. Phil episode, I think today, either today or tomorrow, but I'm almost positive today. And she's one of those people who just kind of vanished. She had a very solid career going for years and years and years, and then just kind of vanished. And every once in a while, I'll see a clip from a movie that she'll be in. I was reading over the summer the sequel to the book The Shining, and I was thinking, boy, where's Shelley Duvall been? She's just kind of gone. I wonder where she is. So now she's resurfaced because she's going to be on an episode of Dr. Phil, and she has all kinds of problems going on. You to see her... Like you would never in a million years, if you just saw, and that's how this was brought to my attention. My wife actually said, hey, you got to see something. And she showed me a picture of a woman. And I go, oh, man, who's that? And it is Shelley Duvall. You would not recognize her.
No, I mean, no makeup, no dark hair anymore. She's gone gray. And just she's not well.
She's on because the reason she's on Dr. Phil is she is experiencing all types of mental illness. Seems to be delusional. She explained to Dr. Phil that she is currently being pursued by the Sheriff of Nottingham.
He's trying to kill her, isn't he?
He's trying to kill her, the Sheriff of Nottingham from Robin Hood. Dr. Phil asked her about Robin Williams because they were in one movie together, Popeye, but I know that they were friends off camera as well. And asked something to the effect of, do you still see Robin Williams? And she said she does. And he asked, how does that happen? And she explained that Robin Williams is a shapeshifter.
He's not really dead. He's right. A shapeshifter.
Right. So the question has arose, is Dr. Phil exploiting her? And he's done this in the past with other celebrities who have hit on hard times. He has them on the show, and then he explains how he's there to help them. But a lot of people wonder, are you helping them, or are you just doing this, you know, for ratings points?
I mean, really, you ask that out loud. If he really wanted to help somebody, wouldn't he do it behind the scenes and say, Shelley, I'm really worried about you. This doesn't seem right. How can I help? And try and truly help her without the public glaring at it. And then perhaps if he is able to help her, then have her come on the show and say, boy, you've come a long way. Why don't you tell your story?
I guess if you're playing it ethically, that's probably the best way to do it. But if you're in the high stakes world of television or, you know,
show business,
right. So if you're Dr. Phil, you say, I bring her on, I expose what she's going through, I work with her, and then the payoff down the line could be we bring her back. I mean, Oprah did this a couple of times as well. It's not just Dr. Phil, but the payoff can be you bring her back in 3 months or 6 months or a year, and things are better for her, and then he's lauded as a hero, isn't he? Doesn't he look great if that plays out that way?
Yeah, but what if it doesn't? Mental illness is something that is tricky.
Sure.
And what if he is unable to help her, and then boom, it's out there that she has some issues and is not helped. Who does that benefit?
Nobody.
Not her, not him.
No. Well, it benefits him in the stake that people have tuned in to see this. It's
but he couldn't help her. What kind of a doctor are you?
I know. But then you can just say it's beyond what I can do. She's so far gone. Let's play. All we have right now is the promo from the show that they have sent out for Dr. Phil's show. We don't really have a lot by way of long clips.
Because it hasn't aired yet?
It has not aired yet. So let's play the promo. This is Dr. Phil sitting with actress Shelley Duvall, who, as we mentioned, and you'll hear, is facing a lot of mental illness problems right now. Listen to this.
The Shining's Shelley Duvall, from red carpet to near recluse.
I loved Robin Williams. I don't think he's dead.
Where do you think he is?
Shape-shifting.
Do you see him?
Have, yes.
A star's descent into mental illness.
The man who threatened me is the Sheriff of Nottingham. I think there's a worrying disc inside me. I'm very sick. I need help.
Well, that's why I'm here.
A powerful new Dr. Phil.
That's not why he's there.
All right, so that, well,
he's there to put on a show.
It's so strange because I guess he's there for both, right? I mean, if all things are right, he helps her. You know, and I don't doubt that he wants to help her, but at the same time you go, well, but you're kind of using this as a spotlight on her to help your show. I don't know. I'm somewhere in the middle. I understand what he's doing, but I want to believe naively that he just genuinely does want to help her. It's sad to see her because, I mean, for years and years and years, she was a very busy actress making great movies. And then she just falls off the face of the earth. So you don't know what led to what. Right. You don't know if she stopped working because she was having mental illness or if the mental illness was because all of a sudden she just wasn't getting jobs. Who knows?
Well, and did he call her? Did he reach out to her? Did she call him? Jim wants to chime in on this. Hi, Jim. How are you? 312-981-7200, by the way.
Good morning, you guys. I always love your show. Thank God I'm retired.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thanks.
Well, you know, I'm a nurse of 25 years, and I know about mental illness, but the point I wanted to make was this. He wrote a book back when the cattle guys were suing Oprah.
Yeah.
I guess that's when he first got connected to her. And in that book, he lightly explained how he lost his license to practice by violating HIPAA. Patient Privacy Act.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this violates HIPAA, too.
Well, no, because he's not, to my knowledge, he's not a licensed professional. You know, Dr. Kildare, if he's a doctor, he could be a doctor. But if you're not practicing and treating, you're not violating. And if the people are volunteering information, then you're not violating either. Also, I think the guy is, it's very difficult for me not to judge him on making money off of this. I'll put it that way.
Well, obviously, if you're following the line is you have somebody like this on, you promote it like crazy, which they've been doing. So then people tune in and that equals ratings and that equals money. So, yeah, he's benefiting from that. But if he helps her, if when the story is done, if she ends up in better shape because of him, then it's kind of it's warranted, isn't it?
Well, it is. And that's why I'm a little torn because, you know, until this recent war, mental health in America, it gets a back seat a lot.
Sure.
And now with, you know, anyway, I'm retired military, so.
Well, thank you for that.
9 minutes later. Well, you're welcome.
Jim, we appreciate the. Oh, go on. Say, what were you going
to
say?
I was just going to say that the benefit would be is that if he spoke to her in advance and she agreed to do this.
But she's mentally ill, so she, you know, can you. Her judgment might be clouded.
I agree. That's the other side of the coin.
It is. It definitely is. All right, Jim, well, thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you for your service and thank you for your call.
Have a blessed day, guys.
Absolutely.
You too.
We've got a bunch of people who want to weigh in on this. Shelley Duvall about to appear on Dr. Phil's show, her first appearance, I think, in anything in years and years and years, facing some mental illness problems. Is Dr. Phil cashing in on this? Is he exploiting her? You tell us, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We're talking about Shelley Duvall, a very popular actress for a long, long time. Wendy Torrance in The Shining, Olive Oil in Popeye.
No, Popeye.
She also had a show on, I want to say on HBO, called Fairy Tale Theater for a number of years where they would update fairy tales. Really
bedtime
well
stories.
Done.
Shelley Duvall's Bedtime Stories.
That's another version. Yeah, that came later.
Like 96 or 98, I can't remember what IMDb said.
Yeah.
But that's the last time she worked on anything. That's the last thing they have registered.
I thought she had a bit part in a movie after that, I thought, but I could be wrong. She is appearing on an episode of Dr. Phil. She's unrecognizable. When you see her, you will not think that it's Shelley Duvall. She's put on a lot of weight. She's not wearing any makeup. Well, she is aged, and she's not aged well, but the bigger problem is she's suffering from several mental issues. So we're trying to figure out, we're not the only ones, trying to figure out if maybe, possibly, Dr. Phil is exploiting Shelley Duvall to some extent. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to chime in.
Sheriff Dave's on the line.
Hey, Bill and Wendy, always love you guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Up against the wall and spread them and tell us what you called about.
Well, that was my line, but I couldn't agree more with Jim. I mean, it's always, always, always going to be about the money. And if Dr. Phil wanted to help Shelley Duvall, he certainly could do so privately. This is nothing more than exploiting the sideshow mentality. I mean, we don't have traveling carnivals anymore, so this is akin to just, you know, exposing somebody's misfortune.
He is not a doctor. He has a PhD in psychology.
So he is
not a medical doctor.
He's a medical doctor. Yeah.
He is not a psychologist, not a licensed. He's not licensed as a psychologist. He used to be licensed, but they took his license away. He cannot practice psychology, and what he does is not actually the practice of psychology, but he can still call himself Dr. Phil. This is from everydaypsychology.com.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that the only possible benefit is it's one more incident where it can, and as you know, I ran a jail for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Sheriff Dart and I had conversations about how jails are really the mental health institutions of the 21st century, and it's a huge problem. And if this is one more spotlight on the issue, the national issue of mental illness, okay, I guess that's a positive, but it certainly isn't to benefit Ms. Duvall.
It's sad but true, Dave. It really is. We appreciate the phone call. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you guys. Enjoy the holiday.
Thank
Bye.
You. All right. So
you as well.
Here's something strange about Dr. Phil, and I know how popular he is. I get it. And actually, I don't tune into his show often, but when I do...
Never watched it.
You've never seen it ever? I've seen it a handful of times, and he knows how to build a story well. He knows how to use the guests to the advantage of the show. He understands that. But he's talked about, he's had several shows and maybe written books about infidelity and how to keep a marriage together, where he's had trouble with his own marriage. He's written books about weight loss and what you need to do to stay in great shape, and he himself isn't in great shape. So I always wonder, how do you pick these areas of expertise when you're having difficulties in them yourself? That seems counterproductive to me.
It sure does. But I think we should find out a little something about Dr. Phil that maybe you didn't know. His wake-up time, 7 a.m. with no alarm. Morning routine, he sleeps with his wife, his dog, and the first thing he does when he gets up is put a collar on my dog.
On his dog, yes. Not on your dog.
A favorite book
Wouldn't
of all time.
Wouldn't that be scary if you woke up and Dr. Phil was putting a collar on your dog? The side door was open, so I let myself in.
You should keep the collar on your dog at all time. I keep a dog collar on Tiki all the time. Why do you take it off at night?
I don't know why.
Favorite book? Any guesses?
Mm-mm.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, yeah. Good book.
Favorite movie? It's a toss-up between Tommy Boy and Used Cars.
Wow.
If Dr. Phil could be any cartoon character, Dr. Phil, who would you be? Take a guess. Any cartoon character.
Well, Tennessee Tuxedo's always been a good guess.
No.
I'm going to go Tennessee Tuxedo.
Superman.
Oh, even better.
If he could be any animal, what would he be?
The Panther.
Oh, my God, you are 100% right.
Did I get that one?
Oh, my God, that's freaking me out. It says a big cat, a panther,
oh,
or
wow.
A lion. They're super
All right.
fast and agile, very stealthy, and can
sure.
see well at night.
Yeah.
And one person he wishes he could have on his show.
Bing Crosby.
Oh, darn it.
Who is it?
Jesus Christ.
Is it? Well, that'd be, you talk about your ratings. That would get a huge
Sweep
rating.
Central.
Yeah, that'd be all right. All right, so is Dr. Phil exploiting Shelley Duvall? We can't say for sure, but she's about to make an appearance on his show. If you want to tune in to see how that plays out, please do. We'll take a quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points,
Still makes me chuckle.
Because he will talk about it. I mean, if it comes up, he doesn't ignore it.
If it comes up, I get it.
That's just locker room talk for me.
Sure. That's all it is. You and Billy Bush sitting on a bus,
yep.
just speaking your minds.
Yep.
What's wrong with
that's
that?
Right.
The Bushy and the Deanie.
Yep. So true. Hey, Dean.
He hasn't been Bushy in about 20 years.
Oh, no.
That sounds wrong.
That
yeah,
sounds totally. On every level. Dean, Wendy and I were just discussing the Shelley Duvall story. Shelley Duvall's making an appearance on Dr. Phil, and she's having some mental issues.
Terrible
we're
story.
Trying to figure out if Dr. Phil is exploiting her. What are your thoughts?
I'm going to say yes.
Me too.
Let me think about it for like a half a second. Absolutely.
Yes.
Is she getting paid for this? Because maybe she needs the money.
I don't think so.
No?
It's not usual that somebody that would go on a show like that would get a salary for an appearance. I don't think that's the case. They're made, I don't know how they are going to wind up doing this whole thing, but, a lot of times they'll say, and we're going to provide you with, appointments with a therapist and, provide help after the fact. But at what price?
Right.
I mean, just, when you read the story, when you see the picture, it's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking. And, if the price of free therapy is having to go on national television she's going to, explain what she is going through and, the hallucinations, it sounds like, that she's been having.
Maybe she wants to get on to help people, show that you're not alone.
Yeah. It seems just so sideshow-like to me.
It does, doesn't it?
It feels weird to me. I'm not a fan of that sort of thing. I mean, if you really want to help her, do it privately.
That's what I said.
Have her come on a year later and talk about how great she is doing, then. To have her come on now, when she's apparently not doing very well, it seems very exploitive to me.
Manna from Heaven was the last movie she was in 2002.
That's the one
there
I'm
was a
of.
bit part.
That's the one I'm thinking of. We were saying earlier how she's one of those. There's so many people in this list, actors and actresses, Dean, who work steadily for years and years and years. And then one day you say to yourself, "Hey, where did they go? Where did Shelley Duvall go? she's one of those people for me for years that I just go, did she decide to just not be in show business, or did Hollywood decide there's no parts for you?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. Maybe it's a little bit of both is all I can think. She hasn't really done a movie or television show, anything, for 20 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been about 20 years or so. What do you remember what year Popeye was? Because honestly, that's the last thing that I, when I think Shelley Duvall, I think of.
The Shining is probably the one that she gets most notoriety from, but Popeye was in the 80s at some point.
Yeah, I don't recall. Popeye's the one that comes to my mind. I remember
she was so good.
Nashville. I remember
all the Altman movies.
Wasn't she in Annie Hall? Wasn't she also in Annie Hall?
1980.
Small role in Annie Hall.
It could be. What was
1980 was Popeye.
Yeah, yeah.
She was the perfect olive oil, man.
Dean, you know who's like that for me now? Like
the perfect olive oil?
Yes. Joe Pesci's a guy who worked steadily forever, and I can't remember the last time I saw him in anything.
It's true.
And I've talked about Gene Hackman, how Gene Hackman for a long time...
He's hot.
Wendy says he's hot, so he's hot.
I've heard that before.
But he's another
Wendy,
guy.
From Wendy, I mean.
I know, right. Only in the Royal Tenenbaums.
Don't even bring up those two words. I won't even say the two words together in front of Wendy, because it's like, slowly I turn, step by step.
Yep.
It's like it triggers some kind of Pavlovian response.
Hot.
But somebody at night, when I was doing the night show, somebody said Gene Hackman just decided at one point he didn't enjoy this anymore and wanted to be an author, so he just writes books now.
That's what I've heard, too, that he just got tired of it and simply quit.
Good for him.
Yeah, if you don't enjoy it, why stick with it?
Right.
Yeah. All right, there's a couple of
That's
movies.
That's why I quit AMP.
Is that why you stopped working at the WIO, at the AMP WIO?
AMP WIO. I was, I don't want to brag. I think I was one of their better cashiers / bag boys.
But they left the door open. They said, if you ever want to come back, you can come back.
They did. They did. And, I went off half-cocked thinking, I'm going to try to see if I can get this to work in radio for me. But, really secretly burning desire.
Yep.
I miss getting on the microphone at the AMP store. Price check in aisle 4.
Was that you doing that?
Price check in aisle. That was my first on-air experience. We have a cleanup in the jelly department.
And then you sent demo tape out to radio stations, and you got
Oddly, that's how I got my first job.
How about that?
Yeah, people said we really like your cleanup announcements. You rocking cleanup announcements, man. We're going to give you a show.
This crate of oranges could be worth money. I remember you used to do that.
A lot of people don't remember that.
Sure, I remember. Bill's, I love that stuff.
Yeah, I love this behind the music thing with Dean every once in a while.
That's why your show is thought of as the VH1 of AM radio.
Yeah, we're good with that.
Yeah. Dean, a couple of big releases coming out this weekend. Let's start out, if you wouldn't mind, with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This looks fantastic. I'm hoping it is.
It's good. I think it's more visually interesting than it is content-wise interesting. The story... I don't think it's quite as good. Visually, it's stunning. It's the really the latest in the Harry Potter franchise. It's the prequel screenplay of which was written by J.K. Rowling herself. This is not a book that was adapted for the big screen. This was written for the big screen by J.K. Rowling herself. And it's a spinoff that's going to be, as I understand it, is going to be like 6 or 8 movies.
Wow.
They've got huge plans for this Fantastic Beast franchise that is, as best as I can remember, I don't remember all the nuanced details of all the Harry Potter movies the way I'm sure probably a 12-year-old kid who's probably really now 25 might remember, but... there is a book that Harry Potter was reading in Sorcerer's Stone called Fantastic Beasts and How and Where to Find Them. And it's sort of an instructional book while he is at Hogwarts at the school, of how to where to find Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
And written by the main character of this movie, who is played by Eddie Redmayne, who... it comes to America in the 1920s. This is part of the beauty of this book. It's a really cool look at New York City in the 1920s. And comes with one a suitcase inside our fantastic beasts that escape from the satchel and you know, get out in New York. And there is there's already a problem with who is a wizard and who is not a wizard in New York City. That's part of the subplots of the whole thing. This interesting that it's a Harry Potter story, but really most of the characters in this movie are adults. Really, all but a few of the characters are adults. So it's, I don't want to say it's darker. It's really not. It's just not as playful as the Harry Potter movies were. It's not as whimsical as the Harry Potter movies were, except when it's completely focused on the beasts, which are beautiful and whimsical and fantasy-filled, fantastic-looking. They are the most exciting parts of the movies. It's story of really trying to wrangle all of these beasts that escape and try to get them back, and clearly setting up this story of wizard versus non-wizards. They all have different names than the Harry Potter movie did, and setting up the movies that will come later on. If you didn't know that the Harry Potter franchise existed, if you hadn't read the books or seen the previous movies, the movie will be exactly the same to you. There are really only a few little references here and there where you hear Dumbledore's name mentioned. You hear some of the familiar characters and things from the Harry Potter movies. But if you aren't into the Harry Potter movies at all, you'll still completely get this, which I like. The story's okay. Visually, the movie is spectacular and really, really beautiful and fun. And it's an all ages movie. You can take everyone. Honestly, really, the only thing that is missing here, Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman should be in this movie.
I am not going.
Gene Hackman. If there was just a cameo or something, the movie would have been a little better. But I'm giving it a Dean's List B.
Oh, that's not bad. And Dean, it opens up the possibility of a sequel, Gene Hackman and Where to Find Him.
Oh,
so I bet that comes out soon.
Great. That would be fantastic.
Yes.
Dean, are you a Harry Potter fan?
I like the movies. I wouldn't say that I'm a Harry Potter fan, though.
I have not seen one lick of any movie.
Wow. Nothing.
Mm-mm.
How about that? Are you purposely staying away?
No, it just never really appealed to me. My kids didn't see it. Jimmy Mack just started watching. He just watched all of them, so he's going tonight to the new one.
Yeah.
He enjoyed it. It's something he said he didn't think he'd be into, but he liked it.
Yeah, the movies are they're fun and they're adventure-filled. Honestly, I get a little bit lost with, in that other world of, language and a lot of the things that really mostly kids, I think really captured their imaginations. I had trouble remembering might just be a function of being an old guy. It's like, what did he say? What was that called again? What? Pull my finger.
You can bring in a cheat sheet, though, like I did with the judges when I voted for judges. I just bring in a cheat sheet.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, it's easier that
way. I
didn't
think of that. I should have. What'd they say? Hogwarts? What is that? What is a muggle again? Wait a minute.
Dean Richards is our guest. We're talking about movies, what's coming out this weekend. We'll continue this discussion next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Our little pumpkin, Dean Richards, is here talking about what movies to see and which to avoid this weekend. Dean, I wish you could see this. Somebody texted in a picture for Wendy, somebody in the 630 area code, and it says, my mom dated Gene Hackman, and there's a picture of their mom, I'd say sometime in the 1950s, with a very young, very handsome Gene Hackman.
Wasn't he from Danville, Illinois?
Yes, he is.
My God, I could have been Mrs. Gene Hackman.
Wouldn't that have been nice?
you would have been married to someone 50 years older than you.
That's all right.
Age doesn't matter to Wendy.
She's
Dean.
Still sexy.
Okay, Charo.
Hey, speaking of affairs, Dean, how about this story? It turns out two of the stars of the Star Wars trilogy, the original Star Wars, were messing with each other's lightsabers.
Talking about the Force. Apparently the Force really was with them, I'm guessing.
Yes.
And there was a big age difference between them as well. Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia, ironically enough. It is.
I heard you hold back on Cochran's show with that.
She was 19 years old at the time when this happened, and Harrison Ford from the Chicago area was married with two kids, 33 years old at the time, when they had a little fling, according to Carrie Fisher. While they were filming the first movie, as Carrie Fisher put it, it was Leia and Han Solo during the week, and on the weekends, it was Carrie and Harrison.
Wow. Wow.
Sitting in a tree.
So they asked him about it the other day, and he just said one word, lawyer. He yelled out, lawyer. I know he was kidding, but every part of that is interesting to me, except for the part about him having a family. That's disturbing.
I didn't even know he was married before and had kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He, I hadn't heard any comment that he'd had it, but Carrie Fisher had said that she sent him a draft of it, that he was fully aware that she was going to include this in her her latest book called Princess Diarist, in which he talks, you know, about affairs and things that have happened in her turbulent life.
Yeah.
So he was apparently aware of the whole thing. I haven't heard any litigation threats.
I think he was.
So apparently.
I'm almost positive he was kidding. You know, because it was years and years ago.
It's weird that isn't it weird that she would just bring it up like all of a sudden? Why now? Why after 40 years you decide? And with her, it's very possible that she only just remembered.
Well, it was
good point,
Dean. It was a long time ago in a galaxy far away, and I mean a Ford Galaxy.
Right. And, you know, the print gets smaller. In her new book, it's very interesting. As you're reading it, the print gets smaller. As you scroll down the page, the actual type size gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
In keeping with the theme, of course.
Yeah.
All right, what about Edge of 17? This looks pretty good, too. I'm hoping this one's a good one.
This one, actually. This is my favorite movie of the week, actually.
Oh, nice. Good.
And I'm generally not that big on coming-of-age movies, because generally coming-of-age movies are not that interesting. They're heralding this as the new 16 Candles or Breakfast Club, and it is only that it's, you know, slice of life for a teenager growing up. In this case, it's Hailee Steinfeld, the actress.
Yeah,
who is in True Grit, who is really, really, really good in this movie. She is an awkward high school junior. She doesn't have very many friends. The one friend that she does have becomes girlfriends with Hailee Steinfeld's brother in the movie, her, you know, most popular kid in school brother, you know, jock, good looking. So now she loses her best friend at the same time to her, you know, dreaded older brother.
Played by Gene Hackman.
Stop it.
So this is, I mean, this is just really a fish out of water story that is so smartly written and smartly sketched. It's very relatable at times for anybody who has ever felt like, you know, when you were a teenager that you were alone, that you were the, you know, you were the only one who thought certain ways or felt certain ways or dressed certain ways. You're going to 100% relate to this character. Kira Sedgwick plays her well-meaning but completely over-the-top mom. Woody Harrelson, in many ways, steals this movie. He is her history teacher and the only one with whom she can confide, and he's just such a disinterested history teacher. I had so many teachers like this that you would go to talk to them, and they could care less.
They gave up.
They could care less. They did give up. They just wanted to get through the day and get back home again. And Woody Harrelson is hilariously funny in this movie. But it's a nice story. It is rated R. It's, you know, the language and some of the sexual things in the movie get pretty real. But it's really entertaining. It's, you know, a nice little slice of life of how awkward it is to be a teenager. Edge of 17, I'm giving Dean's List B+.
Perfect.
Yeah.
My favorite coming-of-age movie was Clerks. I don't know why, but it really was.
Yeah.
I'm a Stand By Me man, I think.
Well, there's
that's great.
Comparisons.
Summer of 42.
Summer of 42.
Pretty great.
Right? There's comparisons with this movie to Juno, which is a great coming of age movie.
Yeah, I think it's way more like Juno than it is Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Or 16 Candles, because at times it's a little bit raw. It's at times, you know, there are some things in here that are a little bit difficult to watch.
Yeah. Well, we'll be waiting for. I can't wait. It looks great. Well,
are the new landlords of the building moving somebody into the
yes
the room?
Yes.
Is the mattress store moving in? Well, I've got my money that our showcase is going to become the first downtown mattress king.
Excellent.
Maybe, possibly.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That's fine, Dean. Thank you so much. Kim, thanks so much. Part two of our show. It's Bill and Wendy. I would suggest right now that you all put your seatbelts on for the feel-good comedy of one Mr. Bobby Slayton. Hello, Bobby.
Hi. You know, you should always have me on longer than you do because I listen to your show. I mean, Bernie Sanders was great. That was a coup for you guys. But the show is like, you know, you should, anyway, I'm wasting time already. But you asked me what I had in the bag. I went to Nordstrom's.
Yes.
I bought myself Psycho Bunny t-shirts to cook in and loungewear. Do you know Psycho Bunny?
I'm not sure
you
what that is.
You look like a Psycho Bunny kind of
what
guy.
What is that?
It's a brand. It's Psycho Bunny. And I have
Bunny or Buddy?
Psycho Bunny.
Funny.
You never saw it?
Let's see. Can we take a look? Put something on.
I love a man who shops. God, yeah. I love a man who
shops. Bobby's a shopper.
It's
comedian slash
buddy.
Shopper.
It's just like sleepwear with skeleton buddies.
That looks comfortable.
Yeah, very comfy.
You look good in
Psycho
that.
Buddy. Yeah, because you know what? You know what Christmas should be, really? Except for the children, where you buy the children presents.
Yes.
What Christmas should be is, instead of going around, you know, they got me something last year, and how much did they spend on me? I got to pretend I like this, and I'm going to return that. I already have one of these. I hate this thing. If everybody would just buy something for themselves,
yes,
and not buy anything for anybody else. I hate getting gifts because you're opening it up and they're pretending you like it. And if I really wanted this, I would have had it in the first place. It's just a pain.
So you say restructure Christmas so that you don't buy gifts for others. You only get gifts for yourself.
Everybody buys something for themselves. That way you get what you want. You're not returning it. Everything works out fine. Anyway, it's nice to be here. Nice to be back in Chicago. I'll be at Zany's Comedy Club tonight downtown. And Friday, Saturday at Rosemont. You know, it doesn't matter how well my career goes.
Yeah.
It really hasn't gone that well over the years. But every time I get something, I wind up back at Zany's. Remember the first time I did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson?
Yeah.
Like a week later, I'm back at Zany's. I just did a Woody Allen project. I worked on Woody's
movie. Yeah, how's that going?
It's good. I did a movie for him and I was on his Amazon series and then went back up at Zany's. It's like the Blair Witch Project. It doesn't matter how far I wander into the comedy woods,
yeah,
into the entertainment forest, I wind up back
Zany's
at Zany's.
Is there for you. Can I ask a favor?
Yeah.
Talk about Woody Allen, because not only did you do a project with Woody Allen, but you've become you're a friend of Woody Allen.
Yes, I am. You want to drop names for me? That way I don't have to do it. I'm friends with a lot of people.
Yep. What's that like to be friends with Woody Allen?
Well, you know, I don't have his home number. I don't really call him and go, hey, you want to go to the basketball game? But
you've had dinners with him?
Yeah, a lot of dinners. Well, a friend of mine, you know, is a friend of Woody's, and he invited me over to his house one time, and I was in L.A., and he said, you know, Woody's a fan of yours. You want to come out to have dinner next weekend with him? And I've been traveling a lot doing stand-up all over the country. And I said to my wife, do I really want to go all the way to New York for a weekend to have dinner with Woody Allen? She goes, what are you insane? And I called up a few comics, Dana Carvey, and they go, yeah, we can have dinner with Woody Allen. And, you know, a lot of comics, a lot of people in showbiz, I mean, everybody wants to work for the guy.
Sure.
And everybody gets paid scale. Everybody, it's not about money. I mean, I get paid the same thing Kate Blanchett gets paid, the same as Kate Winslet in the new movie I just did with him gets paid. You know, he pays scale, you know, the lowest he could possibly pay, and, you know, does whatever this, you know, Screen Actors Guild, things are that he needs to do, fly you in, put you up. But people in showbiz, when Woody Allen calls, they go running. They don't ask, what is it? How much is it?
Right.
It's just a chance to work with one of the greatest directors, certainly most prolific director in the last 20, 30 years, you know?
Is he funny, though, when he doesn't have to be funny? When he's just hanging out, he's funny.
Well, he's a very quiet guy, you know? And I think the more I've gotten to know him over the years, you know, and if he's friends with you, but he's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those people like Warren Beatty that just, I think, just says what he said, but he doesn't talk a lot, you know?
Right.
And at the dinners, he's more entertained by all the comedians that I brought over to my friend's house. And, you know, I mean, at the first dinner we had, it was just Woody and his wife and me and my friend whose house, the host of the party, and it wasn't really a party, but I make sure not to talk about his movies. I make sure to do some research. I started doing stand-up in San Francisco in the 70s, and even though he's from New York, he played there a lot in the 60s. We had a lot of mutual friends. The Smothered Brothers are, you know, Mort Saul and Enrico Banducci, who had the Hungry Eyes. So we had a lot to talk about. And he loves talking about comedy with comedians. So, you know, the next dinner we had, I brought over Louis Black and David Brenner. This was a few years ago.
Wow.
David's gone now.
Yeah.
And Woody brought over Dick Cavett. And then in the middle of
look
dinner.
Look at this group.
Yeah, this is a
nice
dinner.
David Blaine shows up.
Oh, my God. For what reason?
Because everybody's friends with them. You know, Woody and Cavett were amateur magicians. So was Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
You know, early on in their careers. So And he was friends with these guys. So David came at the end of dinner. And after dinner, says, anybody want to see some card tricks? And Blaine had this beautiful sleight of hand. And it was just great. And to shut the four of us up, the five of us up, to shut up Lewis Black and me and Brenner, you know, and even Cabot, you know you got to be good. But for 45 minutes, we're like little kids watching them.
All right. Now, I know this is a sensitive question, but I will ask it anyway.
Yeah.
There have been some allegations with Woody, some personal allegations. Mm-hmm. You can't bring that up in any way, shape, or form with him.
Why
can
would you?
Does that make you uncomfortable, though, when you hear stories about?
Well, I don't believe any of it. To be honest,
you don't believe any of it. No,
because I know the man, and I know. I don't know. I wasn't there, but I don't think he's that person. And I know Mia Farrow's a nut from everybody that's ever met her or talked to her. And I really think she put that in the kids' heads. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I think Donald Trump is in the next Hitler. But that's just my opinion. I mean, it looks beautiful outside.
Isn't
Global
it?
Warming might be a terrific thing. I think next year when I come back, if President Trump has his way, I'll be back in November in shorts. And the year after that, I'm going to come back with a T-shirt and polar bear. We'll be on fire and swimming in molten lava. It could be terrific.
Look at the audience you attract, by the way,
the
Bobby
children?
Slayton. Yeah,
I wish you could hear me. Now, kids, you know what? I didn't go to college. I work an hour a night. It's a whole schoolroom full of children. You have no future.
They love you.
They can hear you, by the way.
And they're all laughing, but they can't hear me.
Do the Hunts Hall impression for the kids.
They don't know who's in charge of America. They don't know what's going on in the Middle East.
The kids want to hear the Hunts Hall.
The Jews, you know, with the gun laws. The kids, it's a horrible world we live in.
You know they can hear you. I swear to God.
Can they?
Yes. Does that change anything? Boy, I just shut Bobby Slayton up. Did you see that?
But there's like so much I can say because I'm on the radio.
I know. So you had some good things happen, and you had a bad thing happen this year as well.
Yeah, you heard about that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a tremendous... Well, it's more than that. I mean, you know, my wife of 30 years died. She was hit by a car in Mexico by an insured driver from the States, of all things. You know, in L.A., she would have been hit by a Mexican with no insurance. But in Mexico is an expat, and she broke her hip, and she died in a hospital in California.
Oh,
who killed her? Total negligence, pneumonia and sepsis. Same thing that killed Patty Duke. We're suing the hospital.
I am so sorry.
Oh, Bobby, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, I'm not trying to. Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, it's awful. But about a week before she died, I was going to New York to do Woody Allen's TV show, the Amazon series he did with Elaine May and Miley Cyrus, which I thought was very funny. I mean, it did get great reviews, but Lewis Black was great. Judy Gold was great. Joy Behar had a small part. But Woody gave me a scene with him, a 7-8 minute scene. That's a long scene. Even my acting coach said, this is hard for a real actor. I know how you're going to do it. Thanks for the vote of confidence. I really appreciate that. But I had 6 weeks to work on the scene, and it was one of the hardest things. And I don't know if it's ADD, if I'm not as bright as I think I am. It was years of smoking pot that maybe I burnt half my brain cells. I don't know what it is, but it took me. I worked on this part every day like I was shooting it the next day. And then my wife died unexpectedly in the hospital, killed her. We are suing for malpractice. We're going to win. They did kill her. It was total negligence. And in California, it's really hard to win. And my lawyer said, well, he's 99.9%. We got it. We have so much proof and medical records. So they killed my wife, pretty much. So right after she died, 5 days later, I'm in New York doing the show for Woody. And he had me come in 3 or 4 days early because they weren't sure with the shooting schedule when I had to do it. So the exhilaration of being in my hometown and working on a Woody Allen project, and my wife had died a week before. I mean, it was, you know, I'm in New York, which is great. I'm trying to work on the part, and my wife's death was distracting me from the part, and the Woody Allen thing was distracting me from my wife's death.
Yeah.
And I'd be, you know, going to some great restaurants with friends, and then I'd hear a song, and I'd see a storm. My wife loved this, and, you know, so it was the most emotionally draining up and down experience. And then about a month ago, 2 months ago, I was in New York playing a comedy club. I think it's Colin Quinn was supposed to do a couple of big scenes in Woody's new movie that's coming out in the summer with Justin Timberlake and Jim Belushi and Kate Winslet. And I guess he hurt his leg. Colin broke his leg or something playing basketball with Adam Sandler in a movie. So the casting director said to Woody, well, how about Bobby Slayton? Because you loved him on the Amazon show. And maybe they wanted somebody who sounded like Colin Quinn.
Oh, you know? Yeah. A little gravelly.
Well, he sounds like me. I did this
right,
first.
You right. did.
And or maybe they wanted somebody to sound like B. Arthur. Or like a straight Harvey Fierstein. I don't know what they wanted. I didn't ask.
Straight Harvey
but I went to New York and was there for a week doing a few more scenes of Woody Allen's new movie. And I wish I could tell you what it's about, but he doesn't give you the script.
Right.
You just sworn to secrecy. You can't talk about it. And even if I could talk about it, I have no idea what it was about.
All right.
So right before I did Woody's movie, I had spoken last year at a friend's funeral, a very close showbiz friend who I can't mention his name now because I'll tell you in a minute why. But he was a... a big time showbiz manager guy, and he was a friend for a long, long time, and a really good friend, and very close to me. And I spoke at his funeral, and so his wife, his widow, lives in my neighborhood in L.A. And I called her up after my wife died, and I said, you know, I've never met you. She said, well, you met me once. I met her at the service, and I never met her before. I forgot what she looked like. I said, we should meet at the local, there's a jazz restaurant right by our house, right up here in Bel Air. She goes, yeah, I love that place. We should meet for a drink. And we have been madly in love for the last 2 months.
Look at that.
That's nice. Good.
And she's everything that I wanted. And, you know, so my life, it's weird that my wife
died. What an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, it's been the best year of my life and the worst year of my life. And I'm sure people have had worse years than me and certainly better years. But to have the best year and worst year of your life, well, actually the last 8 months has been two Woody Allen projects, lost my wife, and fell madly in love. And neither of us wanted this, to be honest with you. You know,
it just happened.
It happened, and you know, she got a beautiful home, and I got a beautiful home, and we're not going to live together. And she loves dogs; she hates people. We both want to stay home and eat, sit by the fireplace. You know, and I'll tell you what happened. What good came of my wife's death? The silver lining is I don't have to see her family next week for Thanksgiving.
Oh my God!
I have something to be thankful for. This is the greatest Thanksgiving I've had in 30 years.
Bobby Slayton's here. Boy, is he thankful! It has been a roller coaster ride.
Crazy.
Go see Bobby at Zanies. Zanies.com has the entire schedule of where he's going to be this weekend, and we'll tell you more specifically next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
No,
you're not done.
You're not done. More things to tell
you. You're not done. Bobby Slayton's here. He is the Pitbull of comedy, I tell you. You can go see him tonight at Zanies in Chicago. You can go see him all the way through,
Rosemont Friday, Saturday.
Rosemont Friday and
Only
Saturday.
One show a night.
Usually
I do two, but Richard Lewis was supposed to do this week, and he just got booked again on the new season of Curb.
Oh.
So Richard canceled. I stepped in. And you know, I mean, I've been coming here. This has always been my week, the week before Thanksgiving, and they gave it to Richard, which is fine.
Yeah.
But, and it's the last week I'm working for 6 weeks. I've never had 6 weeks off in my life. And every year I come here, I'm usually out there walking around. I love to walk.
Yeah.
In my Skechers, by the
way. I know. I was going to ask if you had your Skechers on.
I've always had my Skechers on. I told you last time I was here that they gave me coupons. I meant to bring you coupons for free Skechers. I walk, and I walk this town for hours. I feel like I'm walking on air in my Skechers. They should give me another case of shoes. No, they really are the best.
Well, but you had the light-up ones, right?
I had the light-up ones. They made a special pair for me. The children's shoe, because, my wife forgot those made up for me. My late wife, I should say. And by the way, that's me. Can you just shut up for 1 minute?
Sure.
You have like four hours to talk,
please,
right?
Please, go ahead.
You have a guest for 20 minutes. You can't let anybody talk. It's all about you. But, God, just do the eye commercials. Okay. Anyway, so, you know what was really tough?
Was
writing, you know, changing my act right after my wife passed away. I didn't want to wind up like Vaughn Meader. And for anybody under 60 that's listening to the show, you know, Vaughn Meader, when Kennedy was assassinated in 63, you know, which is a little bit before my time. I mean, I remember it, but, you know, he made his whole career. That one album was like Meet the Beatles of
First
comedy,
Family.
You know, about the First Family and doing impressions of them. And I right after, you know, the Kennedy assassination, they pulled the record, the sales stopped, and Lenny Bruce went on stage that night, and I'm paraphrasing, that Vaughn Meader's career is over. So I really thought that when my wife died, since she was 70-80% of my act, that my career, I you know, I have enough stuff. There's other people that I hated more than my wife. I mean, there's still the gays and the Mexicans and the Arabs, and I mean, there's a million people that I can make fun of who I've never got along with. But my act focused on my wife, so I've kept a lot of the jokes, but I really had to take a lot of the jokes out, which just made me write new stuff.
Do you mention on stage what you've gone through with your wife? Does that come up? You do.
I mentioned it towards the end, and I've got 5-10 minutes of material on it. There's a new Showtime special that we taped up in Montreal about four comedians, and we did a thing called The Nasty Show. And, you know, it's not necessarily dirty or blue, but it is, and it's as nasty as you can get. And I thought this would be a great place to debut the wife jokes, the dead wife jokes. Because if you can't do it at The Nasty Show on Showtime, where can you do it? Stuff went over great. And I don't look forward to talking about it on stage, but you got to address the elephant in the room, you know?
Yeah.
If a one-armed comic goes up there, a blind comic, you know, you got to address the fact it makes it, you know, it's something that I live with. And it won't ring true if I got up on stage and just talk about my wife and not talk about the fact that she passed away.
Right.
So it's been really the toughest thing in my life to have to rewrite material and to do that Woody Allen thing. And of course, dealing with my daughter and her mom's death. And, you know, but there's people listening who've gone through worse stuff. And people go through this every day.
And life goes on after that.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound cold, but it does.
It goes on.
It has to.
You know, right after she died, we had her cremated. And And we just, I didn't want to have a funeral. I thought it would be maudlin and stupid. And, you know, and we just had a big celebration party at the house. And my wife did an amazing job with my home. I have one of the coolest houses. Not a big house, but what a style. And what taste. And there were a couple of things. I didn't turn it into a man cave, but there was a couple. I said to my daughter, when mommy was alive, I hated this painting. Either you take it, give it to a friend, or it's going to the Salvation Army or Goodwill. I don't want this in my house. I mean, I got to say, when my wife died, one of the first things I thought about was a painting over the fireplace going to go. I mean, I thought about all the, and no Thanksgiving. I try to focus on the positive.
Yeah, sure.
In my life. And I didn't expect to fall in love. And I'll tell you the one great, great thing, you know, that did help a lot. When my wife died, my agent called my manager and said, how's Bobby doing for money? And my manager said, Bobby's never done well for money. And I've always pissed it away. I've always, you know, taken my opening acts out to eat. And I really bought some kind of, you know, boxer where you buy a Rolls Royce with gold lights, you know, gold wheel hubcaps. Yeah. But, you know, I would spend money because money's to spend. And I learned a lesson a couple of years ago when I had a $1 million contract in Hooters and pissed it all away. But anyway, the thing was, I really have not saved a lot of money. And so they did a big benefit to raise money to pay my wife's hospital bills in case healthcare didn't cover it. And within an hour, they had Ray Romano, my favorite comic, I think Bill Burr, and Louis Anderson and Brian Regan flew in from Vegas.
Oh, nice.
And Dana Carvey, Arsenio Hall hosted it. Oh. You know, Louis Anderson, Bob Saget, John Lovitz. I mean, they all did this big benefit to raise money. And it just showed me that, you know, and then Leno called and Howie Mandel said I would have done it. And it was just really nice that the comedy community.
That is nice.
I don't know if they would have done that for Carrot Top or for you when you were doing stand up, but they did it for me. That's all I care about. I don't mean to put you in the same category as Carrot Top. But
thank you.
Yeah, that's a slam.
Are
you going to have the Carrot Top.
Oh.
Are you going to have a traditional Thanksgiving? Do you partake in the turkey and all the accoutrement?
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
my
I love
favorite
it.
Holiday. Go, Bill doesn't
I'm
like
gonna,
it.
What I'm going to do is get those, for all my guests, those turkey sandwiches from Firehouse. We're
going
to
eat
what did I sign in?
We're going to heat them up.
Are you going to wear your Skechers while you're doing that?
I'm wearing my little prizes in there. And I might even stick a wishbone in for the kids, you know?
Wishbone dressing on the salad.
There you go. But that's Firehouse subs for Thanksgiving. I know they're a new sponsor. They're terrific. Yeah, I might walk over there in my Skechers.
You should go over. Tell me
tell me. I think they're in Schaumburg. I'm going to walk in these shoes. To take me the no blisters on my feet after my Skechers. Everybody's happy now. Well, everybody's got a plug. Am I a whore? I'm such a whore.
You're not.
You are.
You're not.
We love that.
No, I'm actually, what's really strange is I'm going to go to my girlfriend's house. I just met her mother. And
how'd that go?
Weird? No, it's great. I mean, the whole thing is weird.
Sure it
is. You know,
and
just to be living in a house by myself, you know, after 30 years, and now without my wife there, I don't know when the air conditioning's on too high, and I don't know when the music's too loud. I don't know when I've had too much garlic. I don't know when I've had too much wine. I don't know when I'm driving too fast. As a widower, my life's spinning out of control. Keith Richards called me up. He's worried about me and my crazy lifestyle. So I've been nuts. I'm adjusting. I'm trying not to let things get too out of hand.
You'll make it. You're smart
I'm
enough.
Trying.
You're going to be fine.
I'm trying.
You really will.
Yeah. I have to call my wife's friends and go, is the TV on too loud? You got to come over and help me before I blow out my eardrums. Is the air conditioning on too loud? I don't want to get pneumonia. So I'm learning to adjust to a different life.
Good, good. That's very good.
Yeah.
Go see Bobby Slayton. He's at Zanies all this week. Zanies.com has his complete schedule. Wear the Skechers. It'll make him smile.
Yeah.
He needs to smile.
I need to smile more.
It's
nice
great
to
see you, Bobby.
It's great to see you guys. And hopefully I'll see you next year. And
if I promise.
Warming, I'll see you. I'll be wearing shorts. I have a better tan. This is terrific weather. I love Chicago.
It's pretty great.
My kind of town.
That's Bobby Slayton. He's the pit bull of comedy. Now you know why. Stick around. More show coming. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Does Bobby know we have a show to continue to do?
Yeah, he knows. He's
Bye, Bobby.
Helping us.
Look at those
Thanks,
Skechers
Bobby.
On the way out.
Those are nice Skechers.
You got your Psycho Bunny PJs?
That was Bobby Slayton. He is, as I mentioned, the pit bull of comedy. And it goes against the grain that a man who is the pit bull of comedy would be that excited about tennis shoes that light up. But it means a lot to him. So, good.
I'm telling you, it's really exciting for me to see a guy who shops for himself. I'm serious.
That's
I'm
a
not
turn
used
on,
to
isn't
that.
It?
There was one date night where Jimmy Mack says to me, hey, do you want to go to the outlet malls in Rosemont and then out to dinner? And I said, really? You're asking me to do this? Of course I'd like to go. He needed new jeans.
You know, for my wife, as you know, because you've known me for a long time, I have the ability to fix pretty much nothing. I just can't.
I thought you were going to say everything.
I'm no.
like, I can't fix a thing.
Wait a minute. Whiplash.
No matter how simple it is, if it's
you
a light bulb,
shelves.
I can hang shelves. But at some point, she gets wise to that because she'll tell me to do something, and then she'll come back, and I've put up shelves. And she goes, well, that's not what I asked you to do. And I go, I know, but that's all I can do. But on the limited times where I will get out a screwdriver to screw something in.
It feels very foreign in your hand, doesn't it?
She stares at me like I'm a Greek god. She can't believe. She'll go, oh, go slower. Just let me watch this for a little bit. She can't believe I'm doing something.
Can I say something? There have been studies and studies and studies that men who do more around the house have more fun with their wives.
Sure.
There is something about an effort put forth that means so much.
Right.
You know, I mean, one of our toilets keeps backing up. We keep plunging it. It might be because the tortoise food gets thrown down there, and I don't know if it's supposed to go down there, although it should be able to.
Right.
We might need a new toilet. Even seeing Jim with the plunger was
that
like,
does it
oh
for
my
you.
God, thank you, honey.
Sure.
Say that again for us, will you?
It's serious. And Steve, you're pretty handy, aren't you?
Yeah.
You are.
Less than I used to be, but I have less nerve. I used to try anything.
But that's what I do. I try anything. Like, I may just go buy a new toilet and try and do it. And if it doesn't
put
work,
it
then
yourself?
I'm calling PermaSeal because they do plumbing now.
Right.
You can see the toilet. That's pretty easy.
I change the wax ring. It's the same thing. I just get a new toilet, get a new wax ring, bing, bang, boom, hope
then
it flushes.
You got a planter for the backyard.
Have you been spying on me? You mean I'll have two planters?
The bar at our house is so low that from time to time I'll pull out the Swiffer. And I'll just
do
the bathroom
you even
floor.
Know what a Swiffer?
I know
honest
what
to
it
God,
is.
That means the world to a woman.
And I know how to take it out of the grooves and change it and, you know, flip it around after one side gets dusty. And even though that seems like everyone listening goes, you know what? Everyone else knows that in the world. But the fact that I can do that and I have done it from time to time, when my wife sees that, really, it's like handing her a ring made of gold and diamonds. She just watches me and she goes, oh, this is the best. And it's just me just kind of moving the and I know how ridiculous that sounds. But just because I have the inability to fix things or make things look better, when I do pull it off, it's good news for everybody.
I'm telling you, it means the world when there's an effort put forth.
I bet that's true.
And I really shouldn't complain because I have been able to keep my lovely nails looking lovely because Jim does all the dishes every
day,
really? Every night. That's his gig.
You don't have an electric dishwasher?
Well, yeah, we have a dishwasher. But
you have to wash them before you put them in the dishwasher.
You know, why is that?
It's the same principle by which you clean your house before your cleaning woman comes over. It's just so that there's some semblance of order, I guess.
Well, you want them to be able to mop the floors and vacuum, and if there's crap all over the place. But the dishwasher, I thought granted, ours is pretty old.
Yeah.
But it, you know.
But it's the last line of defense, because if you rinse them off and make things right before you throw them in there, then
but
they
shouldn't
should come
the dishwasher do that?
Yeah, I guess.
You rinse yours off pretty much, too, before you put them on?
I make them so clean that our dishwasher is really unnecessary. I'm like such a stickler for them being really, really clean.
Well, he does. I made stuffed peppers over the weekend, my aunt's recipe. And
aunt?
Yes, aunt.
Aunt.
And today's my sister's birthday. Happy birthday, Betsy.
Happy birthday,
and
Betsy.
I made her stuffed peppers and gave them to her and my cousin Susie. And there were probably five pots that were dirty. Weren't dirty when I woke up in the morning.
Oh, isn't that nice?
He's really good about doing that. But, you know, still, if I saw him with a Swiffer.
What would that do to
you? Ow.
Yeah, sure. All bets are off. All right, we'll do this. We'll come back. Speaking of shopping, I have found something that I think you'll enjoy. Black Friday is coming up a week from tomorrow. This is the day where the best deals in town are to be had. But I read this article about the things that you should not purchase on Black Friday, the things that you will not be getting the best deal on. So as a public service, we will share that with you. That's coming up in just a little bit. we have to call an audible. I found this thing, because Black Friday is a week from tomorrow, about all the things that you should not buy on Black Friday, even though you think they're good deals, they're not. However, we're getting a bunch of texts on something we were talking about a minute ago, so let's study those.
815 says, my husband is so hot when he's fixing stuff. Something about a hammer and a drill on a tool or a tool belt.
Mm-hmm. You understand that, I'm sure.
I do like that.
If you saw me wearing a tool belt,
I'd laugh at
you. Wouldn't that be hysterical?
It would be a Fisher Price tool belt.
My pants would fall down.
It's called women porn. That's what someone has suggested.
That makes perfect sense, sure.
Also, we were contemplating the big lifelong dilemma of why you have to pre-wash your dishes when you have a dishwasher. I mean, again, ours is pretty old. I don't know how recent your dishwasher is, but do you still have to pretty much pre-rinse them quite a bit?
I scrub them and scrub them, and I'm the only one in the house that does that. If Terry or the girls, if it's their time to do dishes, it's just a quick rinse and a throw-in, but then sometimes you'll get a fork or a knife or something that's still kind of sticky or has something on it. There's nothing grosser. Yeah, that's the worst, right?
You're going to empty a clean batch and you find, you know, crusted egg on one of your forks.
Nobody wants that, especially if you haven't had eggs. You go, how long has this been here? Since we moved in.
630 says, when you wash by hand, you're only getting the grime off, but you're not sanitizing the dishes. However, when you use the dishwasher, you're not getting the grime off, but you're sanitizing. It's the catch-22 of the ages.
Oh, that's true.
Bill and Wendy, my husband just made me help him replace the roof on our garage.
Oh.
Okay, that doesn't count. He's got to do it himself.
Our house would cave in if I had to do that. I wouldn't have any idea how to do that.
Someone's telling me to be careful with the tortoise food. It might possibly be expanding in the line further down. We're paranoid about what goes in the toilet aside from the usual. Signed, A. Plumber.
Right.
Anthony Plumber, I believe.
Probably Anthony. Wow. Does tortoise food, does it have a propensity to expand? I didn't know it did
that.
Well,
they're little pellets. Someone who got two tortoises might not feed them as frequently as he should, so
name
maybe
names.
Mom does.
Name
Dylan.
Names. Yeah.
He's pretty good about it, but I feel guilty sometimes, so I will feed them. And they're like little rabbit pellets, and you put it in water, and they do expand, but once they've expanded, it's kind of just mush, so I'm not flushing them down, and then they're expanding. When I'm flushing them, they're pre-expanded.
Oh.
Or post-expanded.
Yeah. So they won't get any bigger. They've reached their potential.
I don't think so.
All right.
And you know how many goldfish people have flushed down the toilet?
Countless. So many.
My goldfish never made it that long. I've had every pet in the world, and I know you did too because your mom tried to make you like animals.
It's the weirdest thing in the world, but as a child, I realized I was not a pet person. And my parents, to try to figure that out, kept bringing home all kinds of pets. We would
Did it bother your mom that you weren't a pet person?
No, she just thought, well, we haven't found the right one yet, but we'll eventually find it. So there was just like a parade of animals. Every year there'd be some new animal that they'd bring home, and they go, we bet you like this. And the answer was always no. I couldn't articulate to them. I just don't want pets. It's not the ones we've had in the past. It's just I'm not a pet person. They kept trying.
I got to tell you, I'm really enjoying these tortoises, and Dylan's been doing a good job. I like to hang with them.
Yeah. Do they do anything?
They eat. The way they eat kale and lettuce, it's just really cool to watch them.
Yeah.
Because they're, honest to God, like little mini dinosaurs. They have beaks.
Yeah.
It's really prehistoric and bizarre.
But how often can you do that? Is that a daily thing?
It's every other day we feed them.
No, but I mean, you don't watch them the whole time.
I do. I've been standing in there stupidly like a proud mother when they eat the kale.
Yeah.
And I just kind of sit there with my arms crossed and I look at them and I smile.
Yeah.
I go, hey, little guy. Doc and Marty are their names. And I
can
tell them apart. And I got to tell you, I've really been enjoying it.
Yeah. You'd recommend this for people looking for a pet, the tortoise?
No, we've had to purchase Fresh Wave, you know, the official deodorizer of the Chicago Blackhawks. We've had to purchase some Fresh Waves because it smells very green in his room.
Oh.
Like grassy.
Yeah.
Not bad. I kind of like the smell, but it's, you know, their pellets are made out of grass and little freeze-dried veggies and stuff.
So that's going to emit some sort of an aroma that's hard to shake. Will you, if you ever decide to sell the house, will that be a problem?
It'll
go away, right?
No, it's just...
Because you've been to houses with people who have had cats where you go, you have a cat? And they go, no, we did 15 years ago. We haven't had one, but you can still smell the cats.
So again, like earlier this morning, you guys know you're on the air.
Oh, we are now.
Right.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I just really love animals of all sorts, and you don't, and that's what we're talking about. Do we really have to explain what we're talking about to Steve Bertrand?
Steve's following along.
Did you get a meter?
I just heard smelly vegetable food that expands in the toilet. That's all I heard.
Well, listeners are helping. Maybe you could help instead of criticizing.
That wasn't a criticism. Yes, it was.
Can we rewind the show for just a minute? Because Bobby Slayton said something that as he said it, I was amused by it, but I don't know if it's real or not. All right. Bobby speaks in a very rapid fire pace, and he just
gotta pay attention.
He just throws stuff in really, really quick. So he was in the middle of telling us the sad story of his wife dying in Mexico, and it was horrendous. And he was talking about how he's had better times and worse times in his life. And he mentioned that a couple of years ago he had a $1 million contract with Hooters, and none of us called him out on it because he was telling us a sad story about his wife. But
no, I didn't call him out on it because he said he got rid of it. He went through it very quickly, and I didn't want
the money he made from his $1 million contract with Hooters. But I didn't want to insult him. But
what did
how
what
did
contract?
That, what, yeah.
He wore his Skechers shoes and the shorts and the hose that they wear and a midriff-bearing Hooters shirt. And he would show up at various Hooters throughout the area and do a 5-minute stand-up before somebody's wings were ready. And
I didn't want to – it's such a sad story of losing his wife. And I didn't want to – at the end, we were saying a goodbye to him because we've known him for years. And I didn't want to go, oh, by the way, that thing about a $1 million contract at Hooters, that was a joke, right? Because I didn't want – if I'm him, I go, did you just hear I told you my wife – I'd be focused on the fact that his wife died. So I didn't want to ask him, but I can't imagine.
He had a deal with the Hooters in Las Vegas with Robin Williams.
Oh.
So does that make more sense to you?
The Hooters Hotel. In Las Vegas All right. So that makes sense, I guess.
You know,
open for Robin
the internet
Williams.
Is a pretty helpful thing.
I don't believe in it.
Well, you can't believe everything you read.
I don't believe in it. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Hooters Hotel in Vegas. Bobby Slayton had a show Saturday at Hooters Casino Hotel. This was years ago.
All right. So he legitimately did have a $1 million deal with Hooters.
What did he buy for $1 million, though?
That's another question that I don't know.
I'm telling you, he went to Nordstrom Rack and Last Call at Saks Fifth Avenue. So it's not like he's going to top end stores.
Right.
He's going to like where I go to Marshalls and TJ's.
Yeah. Right.
And he bought pajamas.
I know. He proudly showed them off to us.
Can I ask you guys personal questions? Do you sleep in pajamas? Like pajamas or maybe a t-shirt and boxers?
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have like little matching jammies or any
I don't have any
an
pajamas,
outfit?
No.
Steve, do you have a sleep outfit?
No.
See what I mean? He's the only guy
I
know who...
I picture Steve in something satiny, and I don't know why.
Smoking jacket, and he doesn't smoke.
A very satiny smoking jacket, yeah.
And scuffy slippers.
When they tell you to slip into bed,
Kevin,
be shiny.
Do you have any kind of pajama-type outfit?
Not really. Sweatpants sometimes if
it's
cold.
Yeah.
Boxers, t-shirt, no t-shirt, and just boxers.
A gladiator outfit. I guess everybody has one of those, right? Probably.
Okay, a onesie, I believe. A gladiator outfit, I'm scared. I don't know any guy that has pajamas other than my dad when I was a little kid.
Yeah, that's who right. It's probably
and Bobby Slayton. That's the only
Bobby
one.
Bobby Slayton, right? And sometimes our dads and Bobby Slayton have a pajama party, and whose business is that but theirs?
And this is for reals, people, because off the air he said, "Really, the psycho bunny? I can't even get as scruffy as he. That's how scruffy he is.
You have to go really low."
I can't like do it, but he was saying, you know, the psycho bunny.
Think Brenda Vaccaro with a sore throat.
They're perfect to wear. They're perfect to wear if you're going to be for pajamas or if you're cooking in the kitchen.
Right.
Like really?
Then you throw on a pair of pajamas. Everybody likes them. You throw them on and you move around. More mobile.
Very soft.
Yeah.
I just blew my throat out.
Sure, that's happening. Yep.
I just never met a man of this era that wears pajamas. So
he's keeping the tradition alive.
Good for him. He's old school.
Yep. All right. A break. Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall joins us, one of our favorite improv groups of all time. Very funny man. He'll be by in just a little bit. And then later on, Kevin Matthews.
It's a Kevin twin spin.
Right. So stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I had to.
This
I know it's easy,
no, it
but...
fits. It fits. Kevin McDonald is here, actor, writer, podcaster, and more. One of the five original members of Kids in the Hall. Kevin will be at the Empennam Theater tomorrow, along with Bob Saget, Scott Adsit, The Fruit Bats. It's the Chicago Podcast Festival. Kevin, great to see you.
Thank you very much. I still like that song. I still don't get bored of it. It's like I feel that I wrote it, though of course I didn't. I'm lying. And here's my boring story about it. No one's asked me anything. I should shut up. The interview, we ran out of time. The guys who did it, the Shadowy Men from a Shadowy Planet, went to high school with Bruce McCullough, the tiny kid in the hall. In fact, he's here. Near the
he's so small.
He is. And Bruce once, drunk at a bar, said to the guitarist Brian Conley, if I ever have a TV show, you're writing the music for it. And then it happened.
I love Shadowy Men from a Shadowy Planet.
They've made a comeback. They've done a reunion tour just recently.
Really?
Yes.
Their song, I think, put us, the viewers, in the mood for the show because it was very mysterious.
Yes.
And I liked it.
Mysterious and fun.
Yeah.
And so we are. We're mysterious and fun.
You're both of those.
We should change the name of the troupe. And I believe that it, I don't mean this in bitterness. I mean this in loveness and joy. I believe it for the next 10 years, it influenced theme songs for
you're right.
The Daily Show.
Yes.
Yeah, that's got the same kind
of feel. It's the same
feel.
Kind of feel, yeah.
King of the
it
Hill does. A little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And another show won't mean anything to you because it's a Canadian show, so I won't bother saying it.
Give me one. Let's see. We may know it.
Now he's been disgraced, so I can't even. Oh. Gian Gomeshi's radio show.
The Rob Ford Show?
The Rob Ford Show is it sounded like. He was a big hit in the Hall of Fame. Could you imagine?
You must be kidding, of course. Proud to know that.
I'm lying. I'm sure he never heard of us, I'm sure.
Can I share a story with you?
Please.
All right, listen to
sharing
this.
Is good.
Years and years ago, Wendy and I were working at another station. We have Scott Thompson on. He's one of the other kids in the hall.
Yes.
And I just say to him, I go, in every improv group, there's a weak link. And I say this as a joke. Who's the weak link in Kids in the Hall?
Kevin
and
McDonald.
He says, Kevin McDonald.
Yeah. Right?
Without even like
pause.
We have Dave Foley on a year later, and I throw him that story,
Kevin
and he
McDonald.
Says, Kevin McDonald. Then we have you on the phone, and I start to tell you the story, and you cut me off, and you say,
Kevin McDonald.
I bet they all say Kevin.
Yes. Now, I think it's because I made that a joke. That I like right away in the first season I did a series of sketches where as the weakest member of the troupe, so I think that's just I hope
everybody stuck with
it
that
is,
I hope they
joke.
Think it's a joke. I hope so. Or what have I tapped? Maybe I tapped into some inner secret of the troupe. I'm not I hope not, but
if you're the weakest link in a group, that's a pretty good group.
Hey, George Harrison was the third best songwriter of the Beatles,
right?
That's why they're the greatest group ever. If George Harrison is the third best songwriter,
you're doing
of course
right.
They're the greatest group.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. How come everybody messes with Ringo? Poor Ringo.
No, Ringo's an amazing drummer. He only wrote a couple songs, and you see in the documentary, George is sort of helping him with the song Octopus's Garden. He's sort of like helping him. So I don't know if he was a great songwriter, though he wrote more in his solo career.
Still touring.
Yes.
And
still touring.
And looking pretty great.
I think he's one of the best drummers in rock and roll.
He is.
He has a sense of rhythm that that you don't hear on any other record. Am I right, Jerry the drummer?
You are.
Thank you very much.
Jerry the drummer.
Hi, Jerry the drummer.
You, came in just to answer that question. That was cool. Thank you, Jerry, for flying in for that.
And then he left. He's on the plane already.
I took two drum lessons, and it was very hard for me. Can you learn rhythm, or do you either have it or you don't?
You can learn it. Are you right or left-handed?
I'm right-handed.
Okay.
You can pop out a mic if you want.
I have no sense of rhythm.
None whatsoever.
I don't believe you. I'm sure you do.
I don't know. I have comedy rhythm. I have maybe a sense of comedy timing. Rhythm. Yeah.
When the group formed, did you guys have any idea of what was to come? It's impossible, isn't it?
It was impossible. At first, because comedy troupes usually like fall apart soon. So even though we were doing the Kids in the Hall, we auditioned for Second City. And Second City, one by one, they would tell us, we'll never hire you. You guys are too weird. Which, if you're 20... you think you're Canadian. You think they're just being nice. I mean, we're bad.
Yeah,
very weird is bad because we're also cocky too. We're cocky for Canadians. So we used to dream that we'd be like the new Monty Python.
But that I know that seems impossible to pull off. But I think
you guys
pulled it off
on a B or C or D level. Yes, maybe we're the B movie Monty Python. But we try to they have the only blueprint in sketch comedy. You do a show for 4 or 5 years and you do a movie every 4 years, and that was our blueprint that fell apart as soon as Brain Candy bombed.
Why did Brain Candy bomb? Because I went and saw that opening night.
Yes.
And it had, Wendy and I have discussed this before, there's a scene in Brain Candy that was extremely controversial with a character named Cancer Boy.
Yes.
Right? Which was, it was as sick as sick can be and as funny can be at the same time.
Yes. And later they used it in the movie, Thank You for Not Smoking. They had a character called Cancer Boy, and everyone loved it. Well, maybe that was part of the small reason why it bombed. Was we fought for Cancer Boy, And Bruce McCullough, he's still here. he got on the phone with the head of the Paramount, and he the Paramount, Paramount, and he.
It's like your parents would say, "You're smoking the pot."
Right,
the pot.
Same thing.
And he talked them into keeping the character, but we found out later. Lorne Michaels told us, "You know, the second they agreed for Cancer Boy, the movie died. There won't be much advertising."
Oh.
But also, it was a weird movie, and I love it. I think it's a very good movie. But the ending, we had a little trouble with the ending. It's not totally satisfying. We had an original ending that was really sad and depressed everybody, but it was sort of the best ending. We just should have done it comically. And the second ending is sort of fine. And the first week, I'm almost stopped talking, I swear to God. And Variety, we were in the top 10. We were number 10. And we thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And we had made it. And then the next week, we were 112.
Whoa.
Anyone who wanted to see the movie saw it the first week, which maybe means the advertising thing. And Siskel and Ebert had a big fight over it. And they had fights a lot, but never before or after did this happen. Ebert refused to talk about the movie. And Siskel got mad and said, "Roger, it's your job. You've got to talk about it." And Roger, this won't help you because it's a weird radio show, but Roger would go...
He just wouldn't talk about it.
Shake his head no.
Shake his head no.
Well, that's got to be a huge compliment, though.
Yeah, in a way.
That is.
That we were so weird that Gene Siskel loved us, and but we're still kind of weird that Roger even refused to talk about it. Nope, not a word. He kept saying, nope. I'm not going to. Nope.
Roger.
But you knew when you pull out something like that, because at its base, cancer is not funny. But
right.
You guys realize, but that's what this is about, is taking something that's so not funny and finding a way to make it palatable.
Well, but also Cancer Boy was an example of the face of a mask on the real joke. And when the real joke, and we don't go around analyzing our jokes, but when we're forced to because people were shocked, it's really about the cult of celebrity.
Yeah.
And about pushing a poor cancer boy like to the front of a camera. And,
right.
No way were we making fun of cancer at all.
No.
But the harder the image, and the stronger the image, the better the satire.
Yeah.
And if the satire is – and again, we didn't sit around going, let's write a good joke about the cult of celebrity.
Right.
But that's how jokes work. If you're sort of smart and you got something to say and you sort of have a point of view, jokes will come out every now and then by accident. Sometimes they're just poo jokes, and then sometimes they're about the cult of celebrity.
And poo jokes work sometimes.
And poo jokes are fine.
What's the thing when people see you and they meet you and they're a fan of Kids in the Hall and you, what's the one thing that they keep bringing up that they love the most?
They usually go, and they get it wrong. They say it wrong because it's changed over the years. People think, they go, I'm squishing your face. Which is really crushing your head, but then I'm squishing your face. Because Zach and Cody, the Disney show, they did it, but squishing your face. Or they go to me based on a character I did, the Will Do. I hear that a lot too.
I loved a pen one. There was
I was
pen,
about to say that's
pen,
one I hear in third
my
place
because
it's Bruce's scene, but I'm the one he was screaming it at. So every now and then I hear my pen.
Love it.
Is this true or not? You guys would do a segment and help me if I'm.
I will help
with
you.
The wrong wording. Kevin.
I am here to help you.
I apologize. It's true. Was that the thing that you would
it's
have?
It's a fact.
It's a fact.
It's
right.
a fact for the
so
fact girl.
Wasn't Nev Campbell in one of those?
She was in. She wasn't in that one, but she was in a sketch.
She was.
She was in a very creepy sketch that Mark and I wrote. Again, we were going for the comedy. I don't know what we were satirizing, but we were two guys who worked. Should I even say this?
I don't know. I don't know.
Be careful.
Right. We had a pizza shop next to a private girls' school.
Right.
Was a sketch.
Oh, right.
And we had cameras all over the place.
Right. That's safe. Yeah, you're safe. You're
I'm
fine.
Say, and yeah. And we just thought it was funny. There was no way were we advocating creepy pizza guys. But that was Nev Campbell's first job, first acting.
Right. Because she was
being the schoolgirl.
She was a young actress growing up in Canada.
Yeah.
And there she was.
Have you ever spoken to her since?
Dave Foley has, and she sees it as a fond memory.
Awesome.
That like her first job, and then we were really nice to her, and then we weren't really creeps, which is the characters we were playing, I swear.
Kevin McDonald Show, kind of like a variety show of podcasts?
Yes, it's kind of like an old school, I'm going for Jack Benny.
Really?
There's sketches, and there's funny songs, and there's monologues, and there's guests, and I interview the guests, and there's like a sort of backstage reality, like the way that he would talk to Rochester. I have an announcer, and we get into fake fights and backstage reality. So I'm totally copying Jack Benny, but here's the hook: I'm not doing it nearly as good.
to be the third best Jack Benny is really all you'll want to be.
That's all I want to be. If I'm the third best Jack Benny.
Yes.
If
something's working. Kevin McDonald's here. More in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kevin McDonald is here, actor, writer, podcaster, one of the most innovative comedy groups of all time, Kids in the Hall. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for providing.
Thank you, Kevin.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying you're welcome.
You're welcome for saying thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Here's a quick question. You just mentioned you're kind of paying tribute to the days of Jack Benny.
Yes.
So when you were a kid, what were you watching and listening to? Obviously, Jack Benny's but one of them. But what were your influences early on?
Okay. I love these kind of questions, and I have no jokes for them. But here I go. I love them, so I'm going to answer truthfully. The first thing I loved as a kid was Jerry Lewis. And later when I got older, I turned against Jerry Lewis. And then when I got even older, I realized I was right both times. Jerry Lewis is a genius in half of all his movies.
Yeah.
And then the other half, you wish somebody was standing next to him going, oh, no, Jerry, don't do that. That's stupid.
Yeah.
But I would say he's a genius in half of all his good movies.
Have you met him or talked to him ever?
I once, at the Emmy Awards, where we were nominated and lost, it was the first award, too, and it's a four-hour award show.
Oh, no.
Oh, bummer.
I heard Emil at his assistant. Emil, get in here! What are you doing? I was alone for 2 minutes! Sorry for screaming.
Wow. No, that's all right.
Wow, so but you got to meet angry Jerry Lewis.
Yes.
Yeah.
But as a kid, Buster Keaton was my big idol, and Marx Brothers, and W.C. Fields, and Lauren Hardy. And then as I got a little older, I loved the 70s people. Who are they? I'll tell you. Woody Allen, Albert Brooks, Mel Brooks, all the Brooks.
The Brooks Brothers.
The Brooks Brothers, Gene Wilder. Did I say Richard Pryor yet?
Richard Pryor.
Steve Martin, and did I say Richard Pryor yet? Richard Pryor.
But that's a who's who of who's been funny over the last several years.
Yeah, it's not like I'm making weird choices.
All good choices.
But also Andy Kaufman.
Loved him.
I think the Kids in the Hall, I've said this once and I'll say it again, are the children of Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
But to get weird, silly.
I like it.
Yeah.
Weird, silly.
You are going to be at the Athenaeum Theater.
I'll treat it very nicely. I'll treat it with respect. I'll throw my garbage in the garbage cans. I'll treat it very nicely.
Look at you.
I'll be very quiet backstage.
That's the Canadian way.
Yes.
That's tomorrow at 7 p.m. Bob Saget, Scott Adsit, Fruit Bats. It's the Chicago Podcast Festival, and it's 2936 North Southport. That confuses me. It should be South Southport, but it's North Southport.
No,
you can go to ChicagoPodcastFestival.org. Any special guests lined up that we should know about for tomorrow night?
Just the ones you mentioned, and I'm very excited. I just had a phone call with Bob Saget. He was hilarious.
He's funny.
He was hilarious, and he was hilarious in a very dark way.
Yes,
that he won't do tomorrow night. but he went on about Trump for like 10 minutes. I laughed so hard I had to use my asthma inhaler.
That's funny.
Yes, he's asthma inhaler funny.
Is he that funny?
Asthma inhaler funny.
I already asked you this off mic, but I want to ask you on mic.
Yes.
You're a Canadian, so I'm guessing over the last week or so, people have said to you things to the effect of, is there room for me if I want to come over? What do you say when people ask you that?
Yes, even Bob Saget said, I'll have my suitcase with me tomorrow night. You can bring me home with you. Even Bob said, it's true. A lot of people are bringing that up because Canada is like a nicer version of the United States. No offense, United States. An even nicer version.
I love your anthem. Version. Oh, Canada is probably one of the most beautiful anthems.
Okay. Yeah, people.
It used to be until you sang it.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you see him deflate?
Yeah, a little bit.
I was just teasing.
I deflated in the sense that I hurt my country.
But now you guys have a new leader, and you went in a very different direction than the U.S.
We
Justin
went very
Trudeau.
Left-wing. Very. He's not in the most left-wing party because we have two left-wing parties. He's in the Liberal Party. The NDP is the more left-wing. But I think, having read his policies, I think he was lying to us. I think he's really NDP. He's
really?
He's very left-wing. But his father, Pierre Trudeau, do you know Trudeau? He sang the anthem beautifully. No, he didn't. he was like an intellectual. And he, is he considered is he just my favorite prime minister? I guess a lot of people would disagree with me, but I would consider him
And Margaret Trudeau was his wife.
Yes, yeah.
And Justin is their child.
Right. And then when they split up, she dated like Mick Jagger and stuff like that. She was like Studio 54 all the time.
Yeah.
How
about that?
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
What was I going to ask you about? Oh, the Canadian
sing
website.
Something.
You can sing something.
We understand you have a song prepared, Kevin. Is that correct?
I know everybody's been saying, you know, if Donald Trump has, and I can't say everyone, because there are a lot of people that are very happy that he's been elected. There are other people that say we're moving to Canada. The Canadian tourist bureau's website crashed?
Yes, it crashed that night of the election. I was in Los Angeles filming something. Not when it was happening. I was in a hotel room after the day filming. And my wife Paula said, I don't know why I thought that was important. At 10 p.m. L.A. time, he wasn't elected yet, but looked like he was going to win. And the report was that the website for Americans to go on to see the how to emigrate.
The immigration website.
Yeah. Crashed! Down. Totally crashed. And no one, like hardly anyone ever goes on it. And that night it crashed. And I think it stayed, you couldn't use it for the next 3 days.
Yeah, wow. What does that tell you? That's crazy.
It says that people were serious when they say, if Trump gets elected, I'm going to Canada. They weren't whistling Dixie.
But we always talk about
it. I won't whistle Dixie. I'm not a good whistler either. I won't whistle Dixie.
They're not going to move there. That people just say that, don't you think?
Five people will move there, but yeah, but
it's not enough.
I think maybe 100, but I think I don't think it'll be. People will stay and fight the good fight, as we've been saying, fight the good fight.
Kevin, we don't have a lot of time, but I'm just curious. What have you not done in the realm of show business that you've always wanted to do? What's the one thing that's still on your bucket list?
Well, I've not run for president.
Not yet.
Like Pat Paulson ran for president
every 4 years.
Yes. Well, I still, even though I'm old now, I still have the same dream that I haven't achieved. I want to write and direct my own movies, and I know it's getting like old to do that, but I still want to do that. Like at least two or three. Yeah. I think I have two or three in me. But, yeah. 3 years in between, I'll be 104. I think I can do that. that's still what I want to do, and I'm very happy with what I've gotten so far. But also I'm happy the fact that I still have a goal.
Yeah.
I'm so successful. It's weird that I still have a goal. I'm the king of comedy, and yet I'm not a king. I still want to do that.
Good. I hope that happens for
Thank
you.
You very much.
You deserve it.
Kevin McDonald's Show. I love the name.
Thank you.
Podcasting in action with special guest Bob Saget, Scott Adsit, Fruit Bats, all happening for the Chicago Podcast Festival. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m., Athenaeum Theater. Am I saying Athenaeum right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's hard, though.
Yeah. It is. It's the weirdest name of a theater ever.
I will treat it with respect.
We appreciate it.
Chicago. All we ask.
Do you have a website? Or you're on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, but I don't know my thing. Yeah, just
all right. My Twitter. That makes it easy.
I don't know.
Kevin's
in there somewhere.
Kevin, what is
there.
It?
He's in there.
It's Kevin at Kevin the KITH.
Mark McKinney made it up for me, so I don't know.
What does
know
that
it
mean? Is there some meaning?
Mark McKinney forced me to go on it because we were touring last year, and we were on a train going from New York to someplace, and he said, we'll put KITH in at Kids in the Hall because he just wanted me on it to promote the tour.
Oh, that was – but don't be bullied by him. You know that.
Yeah. He's the big one.
I guess you should be bullied by him. Okay.
Little Bruce, are you okay? Mark's bullying.
He's still down there.
He's
a team player. Yes. Kevin, great
nice
to see you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hello, Sucky.
did that scare you, Kevin?
Yeah,
we didn't invite you here to scare you.
Oh, God, I left to get away from him. That was really good.
Sorry about that.
Wow.
This song bring back any memories?
Yeah, it's my theme song. And a friend of mine, our production person took all the vocals out, and it was it's Greg Allman. I didn't know it until 3 minutes ago.
It's called Demons.
I knew it was by Greg Allman, or the Allman Brothers, but I didn't know the song. That's kind of sad. Your theme song for 30 years. What is it? I don't know. I have no idea.
That voice you're hearing is Kevin Matthews. Can I say radio legend without embarrassing you? Radio legend.
Okay.
You're okay with it? All right. Radio legend. It's been decided. All right.
I have to say, the last time I interviewed you on a radio show, I was working with Buzz Kilman, and you had your cookbook that came out. And after Buzz and I interviewed you, we lost our shift to you.
Oh.
You know, can you sign something so you don't take mine and Bill's shift?
Yeah, please. It was 5 years ago today I got fired from radio. It's not good.
5 years?
Yeah. You know when you open up Facebook in the morning and you've got coffee and the memories? And well, that's nice. You know.
Just to be reminded of
that. Oh, look at another memory. Oh, 4 years ago, you got MS on this day.
Oh, no.
All the likes.
Oh.
Likes and loves.
People like that.
Yeah. What?
Interesting. You have an interesting group of friends.
I do.
Yay.
I do.
You have a debilitating disease. Yeah. Yay. Yeah,
all right. Yeah. Well, you've been on a little bit of a journey since your radio days. You have a new book out, Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope.
Yeah.
You're going to be out at the Anderson's Bookshop in LaGrange this Sunday at 2 p.m.
2 o'clock to sign them.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to come see you.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm anxious. The book is doing really well. It was released in August, and it deals people. I'm really glad I finally wrote everything down. People go, where did you come from?
Mm-hmm.
Or who are you? Where were you born? And it's right there. And it also, it's a really interesting book. You won't be able to put it down.
That's an indication of a great book.
I wrote it with a nun. I'm
did
not
you really?
You. Yeah. I wrote it with a nun.
How did that happen?
Okay,
that
I'll
doesn't usually happen.
How did it happen?
Yeah.
It's oil and vinegar, right?
Yeah.
I guess what we. You know, when I was diagnosed with MS in 2008, by 2011, my life was just, you know, it changed upside down. I'm not able to do radio. The whole world goes upside down. I went to a florist. I just heard a voice that said, go buy Debbie, my wife, some flowers. So, boom, look, there's a flower shop. I walk in, I get out of my truck, I'm walking to the door. Over by the dumpster, I see this statue of the Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
Broken in half, laying in the dirt, in the garbage. I went over, and I go, I can't leave this here. And I got it. We put it together. We didn't.
Did you put it in your back seat, in your trunk? Did you put
a
seatbelt on it?
Well, I put it in the back. I heard this voice. I cannot leave this here.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it together, but the guy that put it together wanted to repaint her and put new hands on her. Her hands are missing. She's broken in half. I said, no, I want to keep her broken because she reminded me of me.
Oh.
Because at that time, we're all broken.
Yeah.
And that statue, since we did it, has gotten world recognition.
Really?
Around the world.
Yeah.
And it's so that's what this story is all about. It's especially a good story for anybody. We're all broken who's hit hardships. You know, there maybe cancer or addictions or we all, you know, take falls.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is, I think, a really great, it's encouragement. It's a great read.
So despite the fact that we're all broken in some way, shape, or form, we can pick ourselves up and continue?
Big time. Especially what I love about it the most was it is so raw. I wrote this book, and it just no sugarcoat. Here it is. Everything from I grew up in, you know, in just outside Detroit to all kind of Jim Shorts, this little nun, because I found this statue of Broken Mary. I met her, and then she's a writing professor. And a priest said, you know, Kevin, you've got to put this down. And so I tried to con her into writing the whole thing. She said, no, you're going to write it.
Yeah.
But she's so sweet. And she also asked me to have Jim Shorts be part of this book.
Yeah.
And what's nice is Jim is so dark and evil. The book is like skiing a slalom.
I bet.
It is just all of a sudden it's, wow, here's another little anecdote from Jim Shorts. It's really great. The book is really, really great.
That's perfect for you. Good.
And I'm Catholic. I should be a better Catholic. I know you were born and bred Catholic.
Right.
And seeing that broken Virgin Mary statue, you couldn't leave it there. I mean,
no.
We as Catholics, it's like, it's a shame.
It
deserves
Wendy,
a better send-off.
I swear to you, I have nothing to hide. I heard a voice that said, you should get your wife some flowers. There's a flower shop. I drive in. I get out of my truck. I'm walking towards the door. I look at the dumpster. I see this beautiful statue broken in half, covered in dirt. And I heard this voice. Are you going to deny me or will you deny my mother? And I'm like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hadn't taken that statue, I wouldn't be here today. I know it. It's an unbelievable story. And Broken Mary now, people will take this statue in hospice or intensive cares. It's going to prisons. It's going to be going all around the world. People can relate because we are all broken.
We are. We have a bunch of texts that say how much they miss you. Somebody named their daughter Teague because of Kevin Matthews.
That's nice. Yeah.
Your son Trevor is kicking some ass and taking names. He's a great musician.
Well, he reminds me so much of your son because Trev is a guitarist and he's out in L.A. and he worked since he's been playing guitar literally since he was six. And your son is doing the same thing. Trev is having he's fortunate enough. He's on tour with Dawes now. And
he was on Jimmy Kimmel the other night.
On Jimmy Kimmel. And, you know, they've done a lot of work. They've opened for, you know, Mumford & Sons, Bob Dylan.
Wow.
They got a great new album.
He's amazing.
And then Trevor was also over with this other woman. He's, you know, traveled all over into Russia and stuff like that. So
And there's a great picture I believe you shared on your Facebook page with Trevor and Leon Russell, who just passed away.
Yeah, Trev was playing a gig out in California, and here he is backstage with Leon Russell, because Leon was on the bill, and Trev is a huge fan, and of course we lost Leon. We lost a lot of great Prince,
it's
Leon,
been a rough
Bowie.
Year.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. What was the adjustment you had to make when you came to Chicago? I mean, Michigan is fine, but Chicago is just a little bit of a bigger venue for you. Did you have to change anything?
Not a thing.
Nothing?
Not a thing. Throw more gas on it and get in more trouble here. There's more people.
You didn't want to come at first, did you?
No, I wanted to go back to Michigan, but then I'm so glad I did. And I had an absolute blast here, still do. This is
good.
My home.
Good.
This
You're a grandfather?
Good. Yeah, can you believe that?
What do the kids call you?
Bubba.
Bubba.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I like it, though.
Yeah?
I like
That's
it.
Cute.
So if I come back to do radio, which I can't, but I would be Bubba.
Bubba.
This is the Bubba Show. The Bubba Show.
So you didn't select this. They picked
No, they did.
Name. They did.
Which I think is great. They could have said something really blue, and I would have said, oh, that's great. That's my name.
Why are people texting me pictures of monkeys?
Because of Jim Shorts.
I know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Jim. Jim, who definitely wants to get back
into radio?
Chicago TV.
Oh, does he?
He wants to do sports in the morning at Channel 9.
Oh, no. He's not made for TV.
No, according to Jim, he wants to get that Puerto Rican out of there doing sports.
Oh.
And he's got a thing for Robin Baumgarten.
Pat, he's referring, of course, to Pat Tomasulo.
Who's Italian, I believe,
Sicilian.
Yeah, I think
he is Italian, yeah.
Well, not according to Jim.
All right.
The world according to Jim.
Who had a crush on you. At one time, and then you got married. Just think of that.
And also the late, great Janet Reno.
Janet Reno. So
Janet
look
Reno.
At my competition. It didn't make me feel good that Jimmy had a crush on me for a minute.
Yeah. You know, when Janet Reno passed
Boy,
away.
I liked it.
All these people were sending pictures of Janet Reno.
Didn't Jimmy have a character he played named Cecil for
Cecil
a while?
Cecil was Jim's barber.
That's right.
So when did this all begin? In Michigan?
It's
where
in
you
the
were
book.
Just,
it's
I got
in,
a,
I swear
I
to
haven't
you,
read it
it's
yet.
In the book.
Because, boy, you just...
It's in the book.
What's going on in your head sometimes, I just want to be in there for a minute.
My mom was really worried about me at the age of 4. I'm not kidding you. And it's in the book.
Mary, yeah. A Journey of Hope. Just want to jump in,
yeah.
Bill. He's going to be at Anderson's Bookshop in LaGrange on Sunday at 2 p.m.
Yep.
Go there. You can purchase the book. I'm going to purchase one, and hopefully he'll sign it for me.
Oh, we will sign it, and I'm really proud of it.
I want to ask you something about your mom and your dad when we come back.
Okay.
They did something that I loved. We'll share
drink?
That. Yeah, they drank a lot. I think that was a good career move for both of them.
Yeah.
We'll pick this up in just a little bit.
Okay.
It's Kevin Matthews sitting in with us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy and an old radio friend of ours, Kevin Matthews, in the studio. His book, Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. He's going to be at Anderson's Bookshop in LaGrange Sunday at 2 p.m. And you're going to be somewhere else on Saturday. You're doing a podcast live in Countryside.
Yeah, I've got some Chicago cops that I've known since I got here years ago. And now they were rookies. And there's a little neighborhood bar. It's Kenny's Tavern on 55th and Countryside.
Yep, they have great pizza and wings.
Well, between 4 and 7, you come out, we're going to podcast. And
this is Saturday, correct?
Yeah, it's a big day for those folks, my friends at Kenny's. I mean, they've got floodlights, writing with the planes, the marquees. It's huge for them. So
that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good time. From time to time, Kevin, Jim Shorts' parents, Kiki and...
He never had a...
He didn't have a first name.
He had a name.
Just Jimmy's dad.
Jim's dad.
So they would make an appearance on the show, and I would laugh so hard I would cry, and I didn't know who was behind those voices. Is it okay to say?
Yeah.
It's your mom and dad.
That was my mom and dad.
Hysterical.
Think of that.
Hysterical.
They played along
They played along real well. Yeah, they were really crazy. I mean, like, they were crazy... And they loved alcohol.
Oh, well, that's a success.
Crazy
success recipe.
Yeah,
did you have to convince them or guide them and say, "Hey, not at all. Just let them go."
I would say, "Dad, I want to call and I want you to say that you were bit by dogs,
right?
Really bad."
Yeah.
Okay, and he'd just go for it.
And he'd start crying. Oh my God, that was so funny.
Yeah. And we had the best golf outings. We got kicked out of 10 courses in 10 years when I was here. But my dad would come in to play golf, and he'd wear shorts, and his legs were bone white, black socks, these shoes. Oh God, it was horrible. You know, it's like...
I thought of you when the Willowbrook Ballroom burned down.
Oh yeah, that accidentally burnt down.
Yeah, accidentally.
Yeah, accidentally. That's a shame.
Accidents happen.
You had a lot of proms there.
We had toga parties there. Across the street was a great tavern. That was all. That was a house of ill repute.
Yeah.
Yes. Years ago.
Capone's. Time.
What do you think it is about this city and the radio that this city has provided that's so much more experimental and willing to take chances as opposed to other parts of the country?
Because the folks that live in Chicago, if they smell blood, they kill you.
Yeah, that's what it is, right?
It's just, you can't. It's either it works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, you're out of here.
That's it.
Any sports, radio, TV, whatever.
Yeah. Why is Cutler still here then?
Yeah, how come?
Until you sell the team.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I don't have a clue, man. I hear Romo might be coming in.
Yeah, Tony Romo from the Cowboys would be great.
He would be. Because I think he's repaired. I think he's better than Cutler.
We would love to see that.
Cutler just wants to go to Tennessee. Seriously.
And just
buy Dolly World and just hang out and get out of football.
I just want to tell you that I cannot wait to read Broken Mary.
Well, thank you.
A Journey of Hope. Mm-hmm. Going to pick up the book tomorrow. I hope you have enough because people are going to come see you, Kev, at Anderson's on Sunday at 2 p.m. That's the Anderson's in LaGrange. And you can purchase a book there. Kevin will sign it for you.
Yep. And you can get it on Amazon or iBooks or, you know, anywhere.
You print these books by hand, don't you?
I actually made the paper.
You did the paper
now, that
too,
took
the parchment?
Years. Yeah, sure. I wanted to write this book since I was four, but I had to cut the and pulp, and it's a huge process.
Wow. Who else does that? You're the only person
monks,
who still does monks,
and
maybe.
They're a dying breed.
You mentioned you got fired 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You got MS or diagnosed with MS 4 years ago. How are you feeling?
You know, I feel actually as good. I got great doctors. They're making big headway with MS. And
Brian Bickle, of course, from the Blackhawks, just diagnosed.
I wanted to reach out to him because I would love. You need to talk to somebody with MS. MS, it's not a death sentence. There's no cure, but
it's manageable.
Yes, it is. It is. It is. You just enjoy life, man. You know what I'm saying? It's. I would love to talk to him, though. I'll get him a book.
All right. That would
be nice.
We'll try and make a. I'm sure we can get
What a great
contact.
Guy. I mean, he's got that hits you like he will. You know, it's going to change his life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, think of what he can do.
Right.
With people that are diagnosed, or he can coach, or he can do. There's. It's not over.
Well, he seems to have. I don't know if you've heard him, but he seems to have a very positive outlook. Which, having gone through it, you know, you need to.
You have to. Have to. It doesn't run your life. You run it.
Right. Right.
So.
Broken Mary, it's proof we are all broken at some point in our life, and we all will be, and yet there's a way back. Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. Very inspirational.
Please come by, and literally your son, just have it right, and I love it because he plays everywhere. That is little Trevor.
That's what you need to do.
Yeah, you just play.
Yeah.
He's great, man.
Thank you, Michael McInerney. He walks around the house all the time in his underwear playing a guitar, and it sucks when you're trying to watch TV. Was Trevor like that?
I was so proud of Trevor. I never told him to turn it down. He would be playing, and I go, is that it? And he's just like,
crank it more.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, your sister's he's got a dress for you. Crank it up, son.
Great to see you.
Thank
you
so much. God bless you and everybody here.
We'll see you Saturday at Kenny's Tavern in Countryside. And then in LaGrange, Anderson Bookshop, Anderson's Bookshop, 2 p.m.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I love y'all.
Love right back at you, Kev.
Love
you. We'll take a quick break and then we'll find out where we're going.
Love you, miss you.
It's a love fest. That's what it is. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.